Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Garrett Wong, our favorite Ensign Kim from the series Star Trek Voyager. He comes in and talks to us about how he got into the business and his feelings on the series. For more information about the links and the news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
My geek geeks.
It's been a while.
What's Geeks On?
Sorry. Been a while. Huh?
I didn't recognize that.
It was sort of Monty Python-esque.
It was a little Monty
Python-ish.
It's okay. Ish.
Men. Oh, it's fun to be on a ship with men.
No. Matt, introduce yourself.
Sorry. Okay. Hi, I'm Matt. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I'm geek!
Don.
I'm too busy staring at Matt right now.
I know he was.
And I'm Peter, and I'm a writer here in Los Angeles.
And I'm a geek!
Excellent.
And my name is Aaron Hendricks. I'm a filmmaker and graphic designer here in Los Angeles.
And I am Donald Marshall. I am a writer and video game professional here in Hollywood, unlike the rest of these people.
Excellent. And they are...
We're geeks as well.
Geeks!
Excellent.
We have a really extra long, super deluxe...
This episode's packed, people.
It's packed.
Yeah.
Special guest. Yeah,
we've been away for a while, so we figured we'd give you an extra big helping of Geeks On.
Yes.
So we're going to interview a Star Trek character slash actor slash...
Yeah.
Whatever else he does these days.
Star Trek, well, now he's a badass. So.
Yeah, he's a badass.
One of the few gay Jewish Asians that we've ever met.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
You'll understand that when we get to the...
Yeah.
We actually are doing a time travel episode. We actually did the interview first.
So now we're traveling backwards in time or forwards in time?
We're now traveling backwards in time.
Backwards in time to
the beginning of the show.
Before what we will do later.
Yes.
Oh, look, there's a butterfly.
Oh, God, now there's another tsunami in Don.
Tsunamian.
My bad.
No, tsunami.
Tsunami.
Oh.
So how was your geek 3 weeks?
My geek 3 weeks was frickin' awesome.
Rumor has it.
So I, my follow-up to my own life story was that I had... What?
Don't talk about it on the show.
Why not? I talked about it before.
Oh, okay.
You can't get in trouble?
Okay. Can't get in trouble. Okay. Yeah. So I mentioned weeks and weeks ago that I was auditioning for a film called Rage and Fury.
Rage and Fury
with Rob Cohen.
Cajun Fury
was different. That was me when I was wearing the chicken outfit.
Okay.
But this one is, they had me auditioning for the role of Bruce Lee in a new film by Rob Cohen, who did XXX and like that. And long story short, I got it.
Congratulations.
Yay!
So
I will be Bruce Lee upcoming in Rage and Fury, which is pretty damn amazing, and it's going to be the lead. And the thing is, they're bringing Bruce Lee back to life.
You haven't said the production company making it.
The production company is DreamWorks.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Very cool.
So it's
Who's doing the special effects? Do you know?
I think it's ILM.
They're doing the tests and stuff
yes.
right now?
Very so, cool. And what they're doing is they're literally bringing Bruce Lee back to life. They're going to his face on
not literally.
Not literally. We're
that
not
would
actually,
be a little disturbing.
Yes. We're not actually going to resurrect his corpse.
You must be like water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like that Google ad where, you know, I got this thing off the off of a TV show, and I spray it, and it's supposed to be a fertilizer, and you know, it kills everything. And then they redo it, and it's, oh, I found this on Google, and they start spraying it, and all of a sudden this dog pops up out of a grave, and it's like, Fluffy, you're alive.
Yep.
But it's Bruce Lee. It's
that works way better Bruce when you don't Lee. Talk about it on the radio show.
It's I'm giving you the stare that's normally reserved for Matt.
Yep.
I just passed. thought we've actually sunk to that point.
It's really
Peter.
Interesting when I see it not actually aimed at me.
Okay, well
congratulations, Matt.
Thank you very much.
Totally
Yay!
Looking forward to seeing how they do
Should
this.
Should be awesome.
Because
and all four of
like
us
weird.
Have been so busy, we haven't had the time to go out and properly celebrate it yet.
Yes.
But it will be done.
And granted, the trigger, you know, will not... they've greenlit the film, but the trigger is not finally going to get pulled on the special effects side of it, and therefore the film.
So that's
until
the
January 6th. That's
now,
the test.
The test now is...
The test of the test.
If the special effects work, It's a go.
It's a go.
If they can't get it to work, they have
they're
to
gonna
at least
delay.
Get it to work.
They're going to delay. Yes.
So crazy. do we get exclusive interview rights with you when the movie comes out?
Of course.
Cool.
Of course.
We have that now on film. So Entertainment Tonight. Entertainment Tonight can bite me.
Sorry, I'm busy.
Since our last Geeks On, I got a black belt in Tai Chi.
A black belt?
You're yes, black belt?
I know.
How does that work?
Well, you can kick your ass so slowly?
Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. As long as people are moving very slowly, I know how to fight.
That's cool. I have been playing Gears of War.
Ooh. Is it good?
Did you finish the Splinter Cell one?
No.
That I sucked at again?
I've not finished that. That's the kind of the problem. Is Gears of War came out, the reviews were great, and I haven't played much of it because I'm trying to play co-op only. So I haven't moved ahead. I want to play the game kind of like Halo 2. Co-op online
is fun.
Is awesome. You can jump in and out of the body. I could be playing along single player. Someone can say, "Hey, can I join?" You just hit join. You take over the buddy who's always with you anyway. And so you just take it over, and you just keep going.
Wow.
The game is the best-looking video game I've ever seen. It's beautiful.
Is it Years of War or Gears of War?
Gears of War.
Gears of War.
I guess I love their commercial.
It's fun.
I love their commercial.
Yeah, I do, too.
Dearly. I mean, it's...
Which
it's
is this? I haven't seen
one with the Tears for Fears...
guys running through the rain, very slow music.
Yeah.
No?
And those are cutscenes. That is the game.
Wow.
It looks like cutscene. The game looks like a cutscene.
It did look like a cutscene.
It's crazy.
Wow. It's impressive.
So anyway, Lisa and I played online, co-op. I've then played some versus online, which is fun as hell. It's only 8 people, but it's not like Halo where you run around the halls and you just keep running. You have to move from rock to tree and it's crazy.
It's funny. You wear all this armor, but it doesn't seem to do anything for you in the game.
Well, I mean, armor doesn't really stop bullets very well.
Well, I know, but if the armor doesn't stop the bullets, why are you wearing it?
No, it stops bullets. You can literally unload 3 clips on somebody and not kill them.
Okay.
Hmm.
I just saw Peter look out around the corner and his head flew off.
Well, because he's not wearing a helmet.
I got hit a couple times.
Oh, okay.
You know, but you know, I mean, if you think about it, it's like, you know, I was reading about this just the other day. In Star Wars, when people get shot with these lasers, I mean, unless it's a glancing blow...
Oh, the stormtroopers are done.
They go down instantly.
Yeah, stormtroopers are wearing armor, and they get hit in the foot, and they're down.
I
could never figure out why they wore the armor.
Actually, because it stops the glancing blows.
Right.
You know, if it doesn't hit you directly...
But we've just established all the glancing blows. They die. Yeah.
Well, it's all a lightsaber. Anyway. Also, there's another game I played called Space Rangers, which has become my new nightly addiction. And this is a great game.
It's a terrible name.
Well, it's Space Rangers 2, so not only that, it's a terrible name twice. But it's not incredibly graphically intense, but it's so much fun gameplay. And they've combined strategic gameplay. Mm-hmm. They've also combined sort of a game where you're playing a little space guy, and you can go around and trade with other cultures, and you can choose to go on little individual RPG missions. You can get into space battles, everything like that, and it's all turn-based when you're in space. If you ever enter into a battle that's on the planet, it turns into StarCraft, and it's just like real-time strategy. You can pause the game, but it's real-time strategy. You have to build and gain control of bases. It's just like StarCraft. Third aspect of it is if you get sent on missions, they're very much like the old choose your own adventure books. And they're role-playing games. And they're full-on role-playing games with, 10 different options and stuff like that.
And they're all each done at least well enough that you're, you never go, oh, God,
it's another role-playing. Yeah. Thing. No, it's fun. It's fun and they're short.
That's cool.
So it's a really fun game. So not graphically intense, but really fun.
It looked really neat, but it was a PC-only game.
Yeah.
By the way, the people who brought us the World of Warcraft board game is working on a StarCraft board game.
Interesting.
Ooh. So,
well, shall we do some geek news?
Let's do some geek news.
Okay.
Cue the music.
World of Warcraft does a makeover, a serious makeover on one of its new upcoming races. The Blood Elves, which were supposed to be the kind of the new sexy race for the Horde.
Yeah, I thought they were sort of redundant.
No, the Horde has no sexy races.
Okay.
Yeah, they're just elves. I mean, they didn't look that different from elves. The one big difference was the male model was not... Like, the male elves for the Alliance look like the humans. They're big, huge, tall, towering, muscular things. The male blood elves were more kind of slender gymnast-type bodies.
Okay.
And apparently there was a lot of feedback on their forums from lots of people going, like, they look like they're gay. They're like girly boys. And
for fuck's sake.
They have... Blizzard has caved underneath this advice and redone the blood elves so that now they are big moose-like people and look exactly like the elves on the Alliance
stupid.
Side.
Stupid.
So, these all ridiculous characters that we see in video games all the time, these big muscle-bound characters, I thought they were just because the video game industry has zero creative...
You see, I've always held that opinion, too. Apparently, no, I'm wrong. They're being pressured into being conformist with everything they do.
People won't buy it unless...
Well, what was very funny is I read something. The link that talked about this led me to gaygamer.com. Where there was a big discussion by gay and lesbian gamers saying, is this homophobia? The first person who had come out with it was that had first covered this was accusing Blizzard outright of homophobia. Because
I think that's pushing that.
Well, actually,
The character models are fey, and the voiceovers for the male blood elves definitely indicate that the characters are all either bisexual or gay.
Well, that's different than having something
that's
looks
something else,
beefy
but...
or something that doesn't look beefy.
Well, no, but
I mean, trust me, I've lived in West Hollywood. Those guys can kick some serious ass.
No. But Aaron, if you come up with a group of, you know, if you come up with a character design,
mm-hmm.
and they say they're too gay, and then you change it because they say they're too gay.
Okay, that's different. But if that's you're saying these people aren't cool enough, they're not cool and badass
that's
enough.
True. Now
that's
true.
Not saying, well then they
question.
Must be gay.
That's gay is leet speak for anything bad.
Yep.
It's commonly used.
Well, okay, that's true.
So the question is, you know, was it homophobia? Was it them caving to leet speak? Huh.
Is this why they've delayed the release of the game till after January?
I seriously doubt it.
Okay.
Because
they delayed the... Yeah, they're de-gaying.
Well, because on Xbox Live, you know, this map is gay. This weapon is gay. You're right. Yeah. Everything is gay.
It's like that's all they
drive in high school. Freaking nuts.
Yeah.
It's like high schoolers.
Well, they are high schoolers.
The model,
we're
the
old ones. Not a fault we're old.
The link I have will send you to a website where you can see the old model and the new model. And you'll see the old model... is actually, I thought it was pretty interesting looking. It was less beefy than every other male character in the game.
Well, let's also mention,
gay.
I have a question about why you would want to create a character on the bad side that looks exactly like a character on the good side. Is there serious confusion?
I'm not sure about
coloration. No. The bad side characters have blonde hair.
It may be something as simple as that. Like, they
stupid.
May have a different colored skin.
Stupid.
But from what I've seen, the females look pretty much like the female elves. They're just sexy female characters. And then the males, they all looked kind of like arty Renaissance fencers. You know, they had that kind of lithe, long-limbed body.
It's not like...
And now they all look like Lou Ferrigno.
Like Orlando Bloom is like the pinnacle of like buff manhood.
Yeah.
he's metrosexual, for God's sake.
If I was to go back and play today... I mean, would it basically look almost exactly like what it looked when I left 6 months ago?
I haven't played
in
a very long time.
They're not changing anything.
Yeah.
But when the expansion comes out, most likely there will be some changes. New lands, new you know, races, but no new classes. And I think that's a big mistake.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense. You know? Yeah. That's a problem.
Okay. Anyway, Aaron, hit it.
Xbox Live on November 20th, I think, 22nd, they are coming out with... downloadable movies and television shows a la iTunes that you can download high definition movies watch them right on your Xbox
Great.
360. Now the interesting thing about this is that this gets around the buying a Blu-ray or buying an HD DVD. Now you don't need one. Mm-hmm. These movies are going to be priced as much as they would be to rent. So the movies you don't own, you'll buy them and you'll have 24 hours once you start the movie to finish it. You can hold it for like 3 or 4 months, but once you start the movie, you have a 24 hours to actually watch it. They're saying it might be about $4 for a movie, which is totally
That's fine. True. That's legit. Reasonable. And you could watch a high-definition movie without spending $600 on a PlayStation or $200 extra for the HD
That's
DVD.
A great idea.
It's a great idea.
I'm curious how long it takes to download one.
That's what everybody's curious about. Yeah. And right now, the hard drive is only 7 or 8 gigs, I think.
Which is enough to hold, like, one movie.
Which is, like, yeah, two movies. Well, I've got game saves and music and stuff on there. So everyone's expecting Microsoft to announce a big-ass hard drive.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, there's going to be television shows that you will be able to own. And they've got they already have a list of some people. There's going to be about 800 hours at launch of standard definition and 200 hours of high-definition stuff available. You can – right now they've got Batman Forever, Breaking Bonaducci, The Chappelle Show.
Wow. Yeah, and how do you delete? You just delete, so then I guess
yeah,
you get a new one.
Yeah, delete them. And not only that, but if you delete them, it always remembers what you bought. So let's say you download a CSI episode. You don't have enough – and you watch it. You don't have enough room, so you delete it. You can re-download it for free.
Okay.
So you don't have to keep them on your hard drive. You own – you purchased, like, the license to constantly download it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very cool. CSI.
So you can have a virtual video library.
Yep.
That's
Star
amazing.
Trek, that's very smart.
Star Trek, the original.
They better damn well make sure they remember with their next system to carry over my library, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure they will.
Very cool.
So remember we did movie mix-up matches, you know, where you kind of combined two things and made sort of Frankenstein monsters?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well,
where everybody on the site came up with better ones than us.
Yeah, I remember, by
yards and yards.
Well, here's a new Frankenstein monster, and I don't have a clever way of phrasing it, but basically Guiding Light and Marvel Comics...
Oh, God, I saw this.
Guiding Light and Marvel Comics have teamed up for an episode of the long-running series... in an episode called She's a Marvel, where Beth Ehlers, as Harley Davidson Cooper...
This is a soap opera, right?
A soap opera. One of the show's main characters has an accident that gives her superpowers.
Yeah, and did you see what the superpowers were?
Superpowers are like the ability to control the toaster.
Yeah, they were all like being able to control your kitchen appliances.
Oh, were
they?
Okay. She's like,
I'm going to make the
blender run.
Well, it's a bionic woman for the nils.
I'm going to make the toaster go off. I'm going to make the lights flicker. It's like, oh, wow.
Well, there's a picture of her, you know, moving a car or stopping a car from hitting a kid on the front of it. So, I mean.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
But the fact that Marvel is running a comic.
They have a short 8-page commemorative comic alongside it.
Yep.
Eight pages? Boy, they really went
all
out.
Yeah, I know. The superpowers aspect of the story is not such a big stretch for the show, as past plot developments have included a character being cloned and a painting that transported Springfield residents back in time.
Yeah.
So. Well, they also have – isn't that the one where they also have the little puppet – The kid who died. It's like a little puppet, and he comes to life.
He's played by a little person.
I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, no, that's a different show.
And
I think it's Days of Our Lives, which I remember from when my foot was broken, and that's all I watched.
Okay.
So I did.
Really?
Yeah. When my foot was broken, I would just sit there in front of the freaking TV because I couldn't do anything, and I would just sit there and watch Days of Our Lives.
I can't imagine you doing that.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I can't. I
watched it for like
6 months.
Oh, yeah. I was screaming by the end of it.
All right.
Give us some news, man.
All right. So, amazingly, Second Life. Do you know what Second Life is?
Yes.
Second Life is effectively a worldwide online community. Now,
it's
the thing
a massively multiplayer online meeting place slash game.
Slash game place. It is not really a role-playing game. It's not sort of like go get this quest, although you can put that in. Mm-hmm. The thing about it is that it allows – it's more crunchy. It's not as easy to use. But once you learn how to use it, you can build anything. You can build a store. You can go and build your own vehicles. You can do anything.
And you can write code where you actually make your own little games that – people can come and visit and play.
Exactly.
And just adds on to this big server
system. Now that they've broken a million, I think they're at 1,200,000 people, it has now become the first online community with an official Reuters journalism bureau. And Adam Pasek is the bureau chief of Second Life. And basically, they do absolute news stories on Second Life and on what's going on in the community. It's become the first real virtual world. And because of this, IBM, Target, all of these things are starting to go to Second Life and build stores, build, you know, Ford is going in there, Mitsubishi, Toyota, they're going in and they're building concept cars that can fly around the skies or whatever. And you can bring your Second Life character in and buy a Toyota flyer or, you know, go to Target and buy, you know, the shirt that allows you to you know, jump really long distances. It's really odd.
They even had, was it 6 months ago, Duran Duran played a live concert inside the virtual world.
Even weirder than that, they had a news conference with Adam Pasek and I think it was like 20 or 30 people from Second Life talking to I don't think it was Donald Rumsfeld, but it was somebody in the Senate, and they were just talking about, you know, new ideas. And basically, like, this avatar would walk up with pink hair and, like, leather chaps and everything and go, what do you feel about the Middle East? And, like, ask these very involved, intelligent questions.
In this very strange virtual world,
and nobody blinked.
Well,
remarkable.
They don't have those animations in Second Life. Blinking doesn't
exist. Right. True.
Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's going to be nuts, and there you go.
Well, and for the sake of our extra-long, extra-packed episode, we're just going to do our rest of our news stories in brief. The link that I'm putting up there involves with a D&D-motivated murder. A man killed another man, nearly hacked his head off with a homemade samurai sword, because apparently the man was killed in response to constant bullying about his fantasy game obsession. And his defense from his lawyer was D&D.
I see.
He was convicted, by the way.
Okay, here's a quick one by me. You guys may have not heard that there were people lining up 11 days in before the PlayStation 3 to come out in Burbank at the Best Buy there. And the cops came and made them all leave. Four days later. Really? So they were there for 4 days.
4 days
and
later?
Best Buy said, we don't want you in front of the store, and called the cops. And they wouldn't leave, so they called the cops.
Because it had been 4 days.
Oh, okay. That's a little different then.
Well, they knew that they were going to be waiting
that's
for 11.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Why didn't they tell them within
day
the
one.
First hour?
That's what I'm saying. Best Buy is on them because they've been there for 4 days. I mean,
Best Buy should have taken their names and said, you know. Yeah. Get off. You're on the list. We'll let you take the first thing.
Well, but they don't do lottery.
Well, then they should.
See, in Japan, I hear that there's no lines at all. Mm-hmm. It's because they have a lottery. For 3 weeks beforehand, you can go at any time and go get a lottery number, and then they draw those numbers.
I think
that's
really smart.
Yeah, it's a great freaking idea, but, you know, welcome to Best Buy.
Okay, I have a couple for the roundup. One is that doctors use Google to diagnose illnesses. Autopsies have shown doctors seriously misdiagnose fatal illnesses about 20% of the time. So millions of patients are treated for the wrong disease. Google searches found the correct diagnosis in 60% of the cases, 58% of the cases.
So
God, man, if I do it, it's like you always look like, you know,
you're going to die.
You get a spot on your hand, you look it up, and you're like, oh my God, you're dead in weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Blind mice see again after cell transplants.
I saw that, yeah, because they actually found – but the thing also about that was that the stem cells that they used on these adult mice didn't work.
It wasn't stem cells that they were using. They were using actual photoreceptive –
No. But what I'm saying is they injected them with stem cells because they expected the stem cells to just know what to do.
Right.
And what they're saying, unless it is a growing medium, the stem cells don't know what to do. They just sort of sit there and act lost.
Mm.
But when they found cells which were specifically – had already been targeted by the – they had turned from the stem cells into photoreceptors.
They worked fine. Got it.
But the thing was, how are you going to take somebody who's already living and saying, all right, well, this is a child who's growing up, and we're just going to take your growing photoreceptors so we can heal this adult over here? Not going
to
happen.
Okay. City may ask restaurants to list calories. New York is going to start having, like, if you go into, like, Spago's, it'll say, this is the calories, this is percentage fat. Okay. Not for sure, but maybe.
That's been proposed, but there's no way the restaurant industry will ever allow that to go through.
Well, the restaurant industry, unfortunately, doesn't have the final word, so we'll see what they say.
You'd be amazed how much influence they
I'm
can
sure
pull.
They have.
Especially in New York, when the restaurants industry has certain ties to other industries.
Right. And a very small study experimented using a genetically engineered AIDS to fight AIDS, and in they only had 5 subjects, but it seems to be working. Very well.
Whoa.
Yeah. And Matt.
Okay. Just this one specifically for Don, so you guys can close yours if you don't want to. This is for Don.
Yay.
They're doing another Street Fighter movie.
Yay.
And this time, it's going to be scribed by Justin Marks. Yeah, Raul Julian Van Damme again. Fuck. This time, it's going to focus on Chun-Li. He's the main character. All right, so there it is.
I'm sorry, Chun-Li only movie.
Chun-Li only. Well, it's kind of a Chun-Li only movie, but it's the other guys are going to come in, but it's not going to be.
By the way, I've met the girl that did the voice of Chun-Li.
I need a towel.
Yeah. Chun-Li only movie. The guy who scribed this is the guy who just scribed Voltron.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a Voltron movie.
There's going to be a Voltron movie.
Do have they cast Chun-Li yet?
I don't know.
Don, you still have a chance.
Yep.
Woohoo! You just want to see me in the skirt.
That's I.
Why don't we move on to our interview?
Yes.
Well, actually, I have one last follow-up to last week.
Okay.
We asked, and I asked to find out about the graveyard story, you know, which was this question of is there any truth to this idea that bodies are not decomposing?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Preservatives are keeping us from decomposing.
And Smarty Librarian, she forwarded me some information.
Librarian went to her library, did some research.
I love having somebody who listens to our show who's like a researcher.
And corrects us all the time.
Yeah.
She's so right.
It's like having our own MediaMatters.org.
I cannot wait until we do our mail because she's got all these things. She's like, actually, you guys are, you know, it's like, and it's great
actually,
to know. So, but basically, it is true that bodies are not decomposing.
Uh-oh.
That's the first part.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
I feel an apology to the wife.
It's in Germany. Okay. Mm-hmm. And every 30 years or so, they're allowed to dig up graves. Okay. Because they don't have enough
room.
There. It's a big European thing that, you know, they just don't have enough room for graveyards.
Plus they're bigger.
And typically it takes 8 to 10 years for bodies to decompose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they are digging up bodies and they are not decomposing. Okay. Now, here's the second part of it. The question was, is it happening because of preservatives? Okay. Well, they had a big crisis where they all got together and the people who bury the bodies tried to figure out why this is happening. These people are not scientists.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who bury the bodies. And some of them suggested that it might be because of preservatives. Okay. But initial research actually suggests several possible causes.
I think Peter's avoiding apologizing to his wife.
Levels of nitrogen released by corpses and heavy metals such as amalgams used in dental fillings have been rising in soil and in cemeteries according to tests.
Apologize.
So both forms of contamination could be hindering decomposition. But also there are other reasons such as dry weather or overwatering, since we now water graves, that could also be killing off the bacteria in the soil that normally decomposes it. But really, this idea that
sure, it's not all of our vacuum
sealed cheese whiz. Cheese whiz.
Sure,
it's not all of our vacuum sealed coffins we use nowadays.
Yes, exactly.
Well, yeah, the question of whether or not it's the fact that we eat food with preservatives, I don't think that's a very
cheese
realistic.
Whiz.
But she couldn't find any direct.
There has not
reference.
Been, there's not been. Well, no, she found direct references to the initial study, but there's nothing been conclusive since.
Okay.
And this is only in Germany that they've had this problem. This is not like a, you know, but of course we don't really dig up graves over here, so who knows?
So
says you.
All right.
Now let's do our interview.
Woohoo!
Great.
Hit it, Chewy.
For those of you who are unfamiliar with the work of Garrett Wong, he played Ensign Kim on Star Trek Voyager for seven seasons.
Yeah, 7 years.
So you all
know that's one of my favorite of the Star Trek series.
We actually had to wrestle Aaron to the ground and pull the uniform off of his body so he wouldn't shame us.
Take the ears off.
We probably should have let him dress, though.
Yeah, true.
Hmm.
Wow.
Well, if I can't wear the uniform, I'm not going to wear anything. That's all I have to say.
I just thought it was a very strange place to put the ears.
Ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest, Garrett Wong!
Yay! Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Of Star Trek Voyager fame, everything like that. Now, Garrett, I think I'm going to say on behalf of all of the guys and everything like that, Ensign Kim got yoked. Like, what have you been
What is your definition of yoked, please? Please define yoked.
Did you go to prison and just, like, live?
Oh, as in buff. Okay,
yoked,
got it. Okay,
man.
Got it. Yeah, it just seems like I went to prison for a little while. You know, I haven't been out in the public so much. You
for
know?
Our listeners, Garrett has the long hair now with the goatee. He's looking evil and yoked.
He's like the hippie bouncer.
Hippie bouncer.
I like hippie bouncer. Yeah. That's good.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
I can see what you're going with.
I can see.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So what you been doing?
Well, you know, I mean, as far as the working out bit,
I actually answered an ad in the LA Times, believe it or not.
Was it like single white female?
No. Porn music, please.
Did I just set myself up for that? I sure did. Yeah. Bow, bow. No, it was just an ad talking about some fitness company that wanted subjects for their study, you know, and it was what they were offering was I think 3 months or two, yeah, 3 months of personal training with personal trainer for 3 months.
Pete's wife did the same thing.
Oh, really?
It's crazy.
She did something called the Power Pulse, which is this. Boy, it's going to sound wrong. It's a vibrating platform.
Yeah, tell us about the power pulse that she signed up
That's
for.
That's what she told you.
Yeah.
But she says she doesn't need me anymore.
Yeah, it's odd, you know.
I haven't seen her in months.
Yeah.
So was yours like a plant? Like, did they have a specific structure or machine that they were trying to...
No, it was more about a company that had come up with supplements, you know, that had certain shakes and whatnot that mm-hmm. you would have to take. But they split the group of volunteers into two groups, mm-hmm. the control group, which didn't take anything,
and then the
people that had to take everything. I luckily landed in the group that didn't have to take anything. So we all went through the same amount of training, same type of training, but one group didn't have to take the supplements,
so you weren't in the Jacob's Ladder
I wasn't
group.
In Jacob's Ladder group. Thank God. They're all blue now.
They all have an extra appendage. And apparently it worked just fine without the supplements.
No, really.
I mean, it was the first thing Matt said when you walked in.
The thing was, I mean, Garrett and I met on the film that we're both shooting right now, Acts of Violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't recognize
him. I'm
a geek. So, I mean, and the fact they were like, Garrett
it's
Wong.
True.
And I was like, where's Garrett Wong?
Yeah.
Right?
And he pronounced it right. Thank you.
Right.
Good. Yeah. You had no idea until you saw the call sheet or until you saw the...
I looked at the camera. I was like, who's Garrett?
Oh.
So what's this new movie you're working on?
Acts of Violence.
Acts of Violence.
With Lily Sobieski and Ron Perlman.
Right.
Ron Perlman actually gives it geek cred for the show because of Hellboy.
Doesn't Lily give any geek cred there?
She played a geek
in a high school movie. Do you remember this? She was like an outcast, whatever.
Right.
I don't know what the name
I don't
that
ever
was.
I would never get that from Lily because I didn't realize until I met her how gigantic she is.
She's a tall drink of water.
She is.
Really?
She's
almost 6 feet tall.
Yeah, I think her height is five. She's 5'11" and something like that.
She's ginormous. She's
round her up. She's six. She's a big girl.
Yeah.
Would they put you on platforms or something?
No. Actually, you know, because I'm playing a store clerk for this, right? And you know how the store clerks have the raised thing underneath, right? So actually, the funny thing was like I was average height with everybody else in the room, but only because I was the store clerk and standing on an unintentional.
How tall are
box.
You, Matt?
I'm 5'7", 5'8".
Okay.
Really?
He just comes across as smaller.
I'm not a fucking hobbit, Aaron.
I definitely want to know is how... What's your journey to your first job? Like, how did you get the Star Trek role? Or were there roles before that felt like were bridge roles? And how did you get to where you are now?
Sure. I started college at UCLA. So before that, I was in Memphis, Tennessee, going to high school. So I went to a private high school in Memphis, Tennessee, graduated from there.
Boy, you were Asian, weren't
decided
you?
To go as far away as I could, and I ended up at UCLA. My major, I was pre-med, so I was biology major. That changed about 4 or 5 times. Tried out. I said, okay, you know, maybe up history. Mm-hmm. Went to history, to econ, poli-sci, everything, and I was just completely clueless. And then one summer, I started thinking. I started getting very introspective, and I said, what do I want to do in life? You know, you keep hearing, you should choose an occupation which you're happy to do because then, you know, you'll make money. You know, you shouldn't go into something you're not happy. And at that point, I didn't want to be a doctor anymore.
That's a complete Asian American take on the thing.
The old country parents thing because they want you to be the set successful occupation.
Yeah, we actually
mm-hmm. doctor,
about this
engineer. Yeah, yeah, you know.
Which musical instrument do you play? Which,
yeah, exactly.
Do you play violin?
Piano is what I started with, but I actually walked out of my piano class.
Oh,
yeah. It was probably like about maybe the second month in, I'm playing the piano, this one thing that I had learned, this piece, and the teacher who was Russian, you know, she got really mad because I didn't do it correctly. And she goes, no, that is not right. And she puts her fingers on top of my hands and slams them down on the keys like that. So I felt like I was being physically accosted by this woman. I'm like, so I took my hands away and I stood up. My mom's sitting in the room like that. I turned around. I go, I'm finished like that. I walked out. Never learned another day of piano. My sister, of course, she's amazing piano player. She stuck with the Russian lady.
See, now you should have known you were an actor in that moment.
At that point? Yeah. That was so dramatic. The drama was already beginning. Yeah, yeah.
All right,
so that summer, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? So then I started thinking, gosh, number one, growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, I always ignored my heritage. So I felt that I really didn't know much about who I was. So mm-hmm. I said, all right, I'll change my major. Asian studies, East Asian studies. So mm-hmm. I switched my major.
I should get at least a B just for being Asian.
Yeah, for that. And then the other thing was I just started thinking, what did I do when I was a kid that I loved doing? And I said, well, impersonations, entertaining my parents, my parents' friends. It was always about doing these characters. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, maybe I'll give that a shot. Maybe I'll try acting. You know.
Now, did you not change your major to a theater major because of your parents?
No, because of other theater majors at UCLA. Ah. They said, do not switch to theater. I said, why? Because you're used as slave labor. Because every quarter you have to have lighting 102. And what are you learning lighting? Yeah, but you're lighting the main stage production for the school. You see what I'm saying?
I did exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I went to theater school and right. you had to work for the people who had been there for 3 years. I mean,
right.
Which makes sense if you're going to do all 4 years.
Sure. You got to pay your dues, right? But at the same token, for me and my situation, I wasn't a freshman, you know, and well, my friend said, don't do it. So I didn't. So I took every class dealing with acting, you know, stage combat, voice for the actor, you know, movement for the actor, advanced film scene study, whatever.
Very smart.
Did the whole thing and got through, you know, took a lot of upper division electives in theater. And they all thought I was a theater major. That was the funny thing because a lot of those classes you weren't supposed to get into. But every time you go into a class, you write down what other classes you've taken. So by virtue of, you know, that list got longer and longer. I was like, oh, I was in her class and his class. They're like, oh, he must be a theater major, you know.
Oh,
so that's what happened. But this whole time I was fighting with my parents. They were very upset. I remember the day I called my mom and told her that I decided not to be a doctor, decided to go into acting. The phone literally hit the floor. It was just, you know, she couldn't take it. She was absolutely just floored. And from that point forward, for the next 5 years, it was conversations coming from both my mom and my dad calling home, talking to them, and or they're calling me saying, have you decided to give up your crazy dream of being an actor? There was fire from all over the family.
Told them that you were gay
and wanted to be an actor.
And then just said, okay, I'm not gay.
My parents told me when I first came out.
When
I first came out to LA for college, they said that. They said, okay, promise us two things. I was like, what's that? They're like, don't turn gay and don't turn Jewish. So those are two things. I'm like, I'm going to be a gay Chinese Jew. Yeah. Another phone call from my mom. Your dad and I have decided that maybe because you have a lack of discipline, that's why you're deciding this crazy career choice, you know? So we've decided that you should probably join the army. So and I started thinking, what? Because the U.S. Army will definitely instill discipline in you.
It'll snap you into shape.
Oh, yeah.
So we would rather you get killed.
Yeah, we would rather you die than be an actor.
Okay, so
in China, death better than actor.
God.
Peter, that was a terrible impersonation of an Asian man.
So offended.
Wow, he just walked out of the room. He's not
Okay, so you graduated from UCLA.
Yeah.
And what came next?
Well, what happened was I had a real long talk with my parents, and we were at a big family reunion where all kinds of aunts and uncles there on my mom's side, more progressive aunts and uncles, you know, that can understand the arts, okay, the arts world. So,
it wasn't like a receiving line of shame.
No, no. It was my dad's side that's tough on me. My mom's side is more, you know, they're more with the program. So a couple of those aunts, more progressive aunts, pulled them aside and kind of convinced them that, yeah, this is, you should give him a shot. I mean, he's always been really making us laugh and this and that. Give him a shot. You should support him. So then they came in, met with me, and they said, well, what do you need us to do? You know, I said, well, honestly, all of my friends that are actors in this town that are not making it right now, they're not making it because of one reason. Their energy is spent on making ends meet, mm-hmm, trying to make rent, trying to make acting class money, photo money, and not 100% on their auditions and on forwarding their career, you know, making the right connections.
Yeah, they're living.
They're living. And I said, and that's the biggest problem that I see. I see a lot of talented actors in this town, but not a lot of talented actors that have 100% devotion, commitment to the craft.
You know? Should have known that you were going to make it right there.
So I asked for a loan. So I said, I need a loan. I need a loan that'll cover rent, that'll cover all the, you know, jazz, that I don't have to worry about going and waiting tables at four restaurants, you know, mm-hmm, da da da. And then the next question came: how long of a loan do you need? So I sat there and I was like, okay, if I push
25
it,
years.
If I say like an extra, you know, I was thinking like, you know, bargaining here. If I say an extra long time, then I can probably bargain for a shorter time, which is reasonable for me. So I was thinking my whole time in my head, 1 year, 1 year, 1 year. That's it. Just give me 1 year, you know? So I said, 2 years. And they said, okay, your dad and I have to confer on this. We'll get back to you in a week. So they left, you know. They talked. They called me up and they said,
like, well, can I have money for a week?
Yeah,
then?
Can I have money? That 1 week. So then they said yes. I was like, oh wow. I go, that's amazing.
They caved. They didn't even haggle.
They didn't haggle.
What
they
kind
didn't,
of Chinese
haggle.
People are they?
And I kept thinking, yeah, I kept thinking, okay, 2 years. That's awesome. I got 2 years time to book one thing that they can actually see on a theater screen or TV screen, mm-hmm, and that can extend that 2 years
and
to
you,
another.
And you had not booked anything to that point.
Zero.
How many
I had
years,
no agent. I had
how many years outside of school was this?
This was from the day that I took that first acting class, this right. was literally 5 years okay. later. And then I went out to get agents, you know, and the first agent I got was a joke. This guy, you walk in, he was like old school, very small mom pop operation on the wall, with huge pictures of Tina Yothers from Family Ties, you know, the daughter, the blonde daughter.
Wow.
That was his one big client, you know, and there was just the whole place was wallpapered with her photos. Yes. I'm going, wow, I guess you represented her? You know, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Yeah,
where
and
that
the
is.
Guy, yeah, this guy was just, he was scary. Well, with him for 6 months, never had one audition, so I said, look, this is over. I can't do this. So I opened up some.
You're like, that's one quarter of my time.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. I was like, hey, this ain't happening, dude. I got clock running. So I ended up acquiring an agent through an agent workshop.
Okay.
Really? Where you have four, yeah, which is no one gets
Does
it.
That
Nobody
happen?
Gets, yeah.
I thought that was the big joke in Hollywood. The
one of them, yeah.
Wow. Went down to TVI, which is, you know, all they do is just.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which
no,
is
that's
the others.
Where my wife worked.
Oh no. Mm-hmm. So I said, all right, I'll pay the $75, whatever it was, to meet four agents. So you had to come to the thing and do a scene, either a scene with another actor or a monologue. I chose to do two monologues.
Smart.
I picked a comedic monologue and a dramatic one. Dramatic one first went first, and then the comedic one went second. And I paired these monologues down. They're both a minute and 30 seconds each. So I did it. Got out of there, and I remember my conversation when I was doing this. When I walked into the room, all those agents were laughing amongst themselves about the, I don't know what they were doing, yeah. And they really didn't seem like they paid any attention to me. And after I was finished, I was like, "Thank you." They're like, they all just sat there, and they were like, "Okay, all right, thanks a lot." And I walked out. I thought nothing happened. That was on a Saturday. Monday, I get a phone call at 9 a.m. The one agent calls up. He's like, "Has anyone else called you yet?" I go, "No. Are you expecting them to?" He goes, "Yep, I think other people are going to be calling you. I want you to promise me something. You will not sign with anybody until you meet with me." I'm like, "Holy shit!" I was like, "All right, sure. You know, in fact, can I send your the one headshot and resume I have of you? Can I send that out on the soap opera thing that I got? You know, listing." I said, "Sure. Do what you want. Okay." 30 minutes later, bring, second agency calls. An hour after that, the third agency calls. So three of the four called me back on that Monday morning. So at that point, I'm thinking, hey, I did something right, you know?
Yeah.
Go in and meet all these people. I have no – they go, "So are you SAG? No. You have a reel? No. Do you have anything? No. I don't have anything."
Wow.
"What you got? Two monologues like that? You want to hear that?"
Minute 30 each.
Yeah, minute 30 each. Not much time. Bam. Laid them out, you know, did the monologues again, and I remember at one agency, they had, you know, they usually bring all the other agents to watch, you know, to meet you. And
right.
So I do the monologues, and after I was done, they started asking questions like, did you write that? Like that email? Is that from da 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 da? And the thing is, with these monologues, I picked Asian American playwright, you know? Okay. So the thing is, if you are an actor, pick a playwright and you're doing a monologue or a scene, pick someone from your part of the country where you were raised or what your background is. I think that's very important.
I sat in on a casting thing at the Public Theater in New York City.
Yes.
You'd be amazed how many people don't take that advice.
Oh, my God.
I had a white woman come in and do a monologue written for a black man.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you listen to what you're saying, I mean, Garrett, straight out, more than anything else, what you've done here is talking about really brilliant marketing in terms of what, you know, how to start an acting career, because that's what it is.
Yeah, I really studied. I bought all the trade papers. I read the papers, so I knew who was at what studio. I read up on what agencies, all the formulations of all the agencies in town. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of research because someone always told me that, okay, show business is 10% show, 90% business.
Yeah.
So you really got to know it's a business. And all those theater department people who are theater majors who a lot of times come to Hollywood and they're like, you know what, I'm above this. Mm-hmm. I'm an actor. I'm a creative person. I don't have to pander. I don't have to become this, you know, business side of this. Forget it. And they overlook that and they go nowhere because that's a very important side of it.
Yep.
One of the things I noticed when I was just watching Tonight Show, any of these late night talk shows that always have a new big actor from a new movie that you've never seen before, right? The question is always invariably, were you discovered? The answer would always be the same. Didn't matter if it was male, female. It was, and I'm talking about adult actors, not child actors. I'm talking about adult actors. The answer was always the same. It was like, no Johnny, no Jay, no whoever, fill in the blank. I wasn't discovered. I've been acting for, and the number was the same three numbers. It was 8, 9, or 10 years. Right. It was always 8, 9, 10. That's how long they've been hitting the pavement before they got discovered.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
There's a 10-year turnaround. There's
So for me, I said, okay, 8 years. I'm going to say for me, it'll be half that because I know there's so few, there are fewer roles for Asian Americans, but yet no Caucasian person or African American person can get that role. But
you're lucky Mickey Rooney, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Yeah, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, so. Unbelievable.
Thank God.
Unbelievable.
It makes me want to put a railroad spike in my head.
You know what? It is. It's tough because even I think Asians have been the most. And my mom told me this. Before you go do this podcast thing, don't talk about anything negative about race like you always talk about. I said, Mom, that's how I got being raised in Memphis. That's so a part of my, you know, my who I am.
Was it really?
And that's one of the reasons why I think I achieved success so quickly, because that was my main motivation. Portray a character which is non-stereotypical to stop other Asian kids from getting picked on like I did every day in Memphis, Tennessee. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't about, oh, you know, I'm so good looking, or I'm going to do this and I'm going to make so much money. I'm going to be so famous. You know, it was about do this job and blow away all those rednecks around the, you know, in this country so they can understand that I can speak without an accent. I don't have to talk like this. You know, I can talk normal, just like this, you know?
Well, I think it's something we definitely wanted to talk about today because Matt, I think you're semi-frustrated going out on auditions.
Yeah, I have been.
You know, it's
Rickshaw driver again.
But you hear this all the time from, like, you know, like even our friend Aris and stuff.
Yep.
You know, how many times he has to go out for the gang member?
Yeah, he's always a gang
Puerto
member.
Rican guy, gang member, gang member. Gang.
I had my first experience writing in Hollywood. I was writing a ghost pilot for a very prestigious older director. Old Hollywood power player, right? And I turned in the script to him, and it was about a female private eye, and the love interest was a male Asian American police detective. And by the time he'd gone through all of his rewrites, it was now a female Asian sidekick who learned kung fu from her grandfather. But aside from the point, the quote that the man said to me about that character was, "Asian, I don't want to watch the bus boy be the love interest."
See,
you know?
See that spike in our heads.
Yeah.
Isn't that hardcore? That's hardcore.
Oh. But unfortunately,
it's the fact
people and even though it's against what we want to believe, is that we use stereotypes to tell stories in our culture,
true.
In every culture.
True.
And so
the stereotype allows a shorthand.
Right, you know? Exactly. And so okay. The problem is that we use that as shorthand, and then it's, you know, people get stuck in it. You guys are getting stuck in it. Well, everybody gets stuck right. in it. And so, you know what I mean? It's this horrible push-pull thing.
Right.
Right.
Which is interesting because one of the major breakout things has been, for Asian American men specifically, has been sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because in sci-fi, it's like, those don't count.
Oh, actually, that's like a kid's show. Oh, it's make-believe. It doesn't matter. We'll let them have a role.
Actually, would love to believe that science fiction is good at that, but science fiction has always been marketed toward white dudes.
True.
So black, you know, a black cast in science fiction, rare.
Right.
It is. It's just rare.
Well, I mean...
Female captain.
Yeah.
Rare.
Yeah.
I mean, people bitched about that
right.
forever. I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know...
Well, the question has to be thrown out, because at some point, I hope to get this guy on our show, too. When you were growing up, and I'm sure the same with you and me, George Takei was one of the few Asian faces you ever saw on television.
Yep. Yes.
You know,
it was George Takei and it was Hop Sing from Bonanza. Those were the two that.
Oh my God! Hop Sing from Bonanza.
Yeah.
Wow.
I never watched that.
Yeah.
Wow.
The
so
cook.
True.
Yeah. The cook.
Yeah.
The cook.
Yeah.
Man, anyway.
And the deal, I mean, not until college did I realize why he was the cook. Okay, why didn't he have a gun shooting people like him? But, you know, why wasn't he a tough guy? Well, I mean, back in the old days, the Chinese were pretty much every industry they tried to enter after building the railroad, they were kicked out of.
Right.
They tried to fish. Well, they actually passed legislation. I'm sorry, you can't be fishermen. You know, they tried
really?
To do this.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to try to live here? I'm sorry, you can't live here. You have to live in this little tiny little area, which we call Chinatown, okay? And you have to live on top of each other. You can't move out of there. You can't. Oh, you want to marry that pretty little white girl? You can't touch her. You know, I'll kill you for that.
I think they're the only ethnic group where a law was passed where they couldn't bring their wives over.
Yeah, there was the only one. There was the only one. I would say there were so many laws that were against Asians at the time, especially Chinese, that it was ridiculous. So they were relegated to the jobs on the Old West that that nobody else wanted to do. They were cooks and they were washing clothes. That's it. Because at the time, I think if you wanted your clothes cleaned, you'd have to send them back to Boston. And they would come back from Boston, and then it'd take you 2 weeks to get your clothes back.
Did they also do pedicures and manicures back
then,
too?
They did.
Oh, Aaron. Hell.
I'm sorry.
Hell in a handbasket.
It's mandatory for us to offend one racial group every show.
Right, right.
Before we go too far down, I want to continue
No, the Vietnamese
on.
Hadn't showed up yet, so right. I just want to...
I want to continue down the path of the your career here.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Get too further off track.
So basically, I got the agent, you know, one of the agents from the workshop became my agent. That whole first year, it was tough. The first 12 months that I was with this agent, I went on 12 auditions. And at the same time, I got a commercial agent, too. And the commercial agency wasn't going that well, either. It was very, you know, minimal. And, you know, if you go on commercials in this town and you're a young Caucasian male, you could go on 20 quite a few in a week if it was back in the heyday of it, right? Mm-hmm. Now with reality program, it's changed, definitely. The landscape has changed. But back then, still very minimal. And I remember at the nine-month period, I was freaking out. I was going, I'm almost to the year. Almost halfway there. I got nothing to show for it. And I remember I went to the gym and I checked my messages from the gym and it was like, this is your commercial agency calling. We have a commercial audition for you in Santa Monica for Burger King. If you'd like to show at 3 o'clock. So I go, and at that point I'd already decided I'm going to quit commercial auditions because that was ridiculous. You sit there and drive forever, fight traffic, and finally park to go in for them to say, yeah, turn right, turn left, turn around, slate your name, thank you. Mm-hmm. So at that point I said, I'm not going to go, but I'm not going to have a commercial agency after this day. But that was the ticket. That because it was a complete change in my head. Right. And it was very weird because when you are desperate for something, less chance of you getting it. It's almost like you're being in a bar. You know, if you're in a bar, you're a guy, you walk up to a girl, you're like, hey, can I get your number? Oh, my God. Oh, they're going to be like, oh. But the minute you are kind of like, hey, how's it going? All right, I got to go. You know, or kind of standoffish, like, all right, I'm done. You end the conversation. You control the moment. Then you leave them wanting more of you.
I always say that LA is like a really hot cheerleader.
LA is a really hot cheerleader?
LA is a really hot cheerleader. You have to ignore her and ignore
yes,
her.
Yes, you have ignore to ignore her. Yeah, so that's what I did. Left there. An hour later, beep.
We apologize to our hot cheerleader audience.
See?
You got the role. I go, wow, I got the commercial. They go, you got that commercial, and they also, Burger King would like to use you for two other commercials. So I booked three in one shot. So I told my parents. They didn't believe me. I said, look, I just booked a bunch of commercials. They're like, oh, well, that's good. Well, how come we haven't seen it yet? I said, because it takes time to come out, you know?
Right.
Finally, the Burger King came out, and it was probably 11:30 at night. I get a call from my dad, who's a very quiet one. My mom's the big talker. My dad calls up. You know, he's got a heavy Chinese accent. You know, he's like, son! I'm like, yeah? We just saw your commercial! Like that. I'm like, and he's never this excited. I'm like, yeah? And I played to the employee. You know, I was wearing a hat and everything behind the counter. He's like, oh, you look like such good Burger King boy! He sat there. I was like, what? You saw the crew? He's like, oh, it's so good. I'm so happy. And I'm like, great, great. You proud? Yeah, I'm so proud of you. I go, and I said, what about mom? Where is she happy too? Yeah, she's still, okay, she's right here. Hold on, hold on. And so he gets a phone to my mom. My mom's been my biggest, you know, opponent this whole time.
Okay.
She gets the phone and she's holding the phone. I'm like, mom, hello? Hello? She doesn't say anything. I go, did you see it? She's like, yeah, I saw it. She's almost like, you know, I showed her up.
Like, she has to say, okay, you did it.
Yeah, because moms are always right. And the minute you prove them wrong, even in a successful situation, they're pissed, you know? So I said, so you saw it? She's like, yeah, I saw it. I go, well, okay, cool. Are you proud? She's like, I'm proud. Here's your dad. Like that. And that was it.
Okay.
At the 13-month period was the first speaking on-camera role that wasn't a commercial. Mm-hmm. That was Margaret Cho's All-American Girl on ABC. Short-lived one-season show about... Mm-hmm.
Could have been great.
Yeah, could have been great. Margaret Cho and her family. But the problem with that show that it was doomed to fail was that Margaret Cho, when you watch her comedy, it's very raw. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's very, very raw
stuff.
It's not
All-American
Girl. It's more Brett Butler. It's more Roseanne. Yeah, it's more caustic kind of like, rub you that way kind of humor, right?
If that show had been tongue-in-cheek, if they had meant All-American Girl, like, hey, we're going to
really rip it, it would have worked. But they let other writers come in and try to put a little Cosby Show twist on it.
It seemed like it had been gutted. What did you play on that?
Exactly. The role that I played was Handsome Korean Man Number 2. Oh, my God, you got that? And the funny thing is, I'm Chinese, but almost all the roles I've played have been Korean. It's very, very, very funny. Tim Lunabos, who's half Korean, all the roles he's played have been Chinese for some reason. But this role...
That's funny. I'm Chinese, and all the roles I play have been gay.
Really?
Yeah.
Play.
Okay. So, when we were filming, what happened was it was the pilot, you know? It was a pilot, the first episode. And after we got done, my agent called me up and said, they want to use you again. I said, what do you mean? They want to use you for the first episode after the pilot as a guest star. Mm-hmm. I said, well, how are they going to do that? I already played in the pilot as Handsome Korean Man Number 2. And they said, no. They're going to recast that and retape it. Which is very rare. It's not common in television that they actually retape it. And they have to recreate the set that I was on, you know, and then find another actor. That very rare that happens. Mm-hmm. And the person who they gave it to was actually Tim Lunabos. I called Tim and said, hey, get your agent in on this because they're moving me. They're upgrading me. So they got to redo the part that I did in the pilot. Wow. And he thought I was giving him like sloppy seconds. So he kind of took offense to that phone call.
I was like, Tim,
it's work. And B, it's cool because, you know, you're with an all Asian cast. Yeah. It's kind of, you're going to like it,
job.
Dude. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, years later, he's like, I agree. You're right. Sorry. You know, but the role that I got was Raymond Han. I played an anesthesiologist, which is what I was planning on doing before I went into acting. I was going to be an anesthesiologist. I was going to be the guy that knocked you out, right?
I just wanted drugs.
So then Raymond Han, so I had a character name. Everything was very cool. And I was playing her boyfriend in the very first episode, possibly recurring. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, this is cool. Went in there, did the thing. Had my parents come down to L.A. to watch the taping.
Nice.
To be able to
see
me on stage as a doctor, right? You know, so I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV, you know, so they're there and they were just, you know, they were floored. And whenever you come to a production and you see all hair and makeup all futzing around you and you're the center of attention and there's other little people orbiting around you, you know, it's very, very exciting for them. So they were like, wow.
It was a live studio audience.
Yeah, it was live. And so they're getting into it, did that. And actually I was in rehearsal for this guest starring role when I got the call about Star Trek. And I was in Clay Kasatsu's trailer when I called my agent up. And I was like, I got to borrow your phone, man. So I called him up. And my agent at the time was a very Stephen Wright-esque, you know, mm-hmm. the comedian Stephen Wright-esque type of delivery of his voice. Yeah, so I was like, so what happened, Jim? It's like, yeah, you got it. I'm like, I got the role? He's like, yeah, you got it. I'm like, well, you don't sound very excited. He's like, I'm very excited. I was like, okay. So
wow.
I booked it on the while I was, you know, on the ABC Disney set.
Wow. Huh.
And he said, okay. And there's one thing, though. You need to get your butt over to Paramount for wardrobe. I said, it's 5:15 p.m. right now in Burbank. You want me to go to Over the Hill to, you know, Hollywood? And get there by 15 minutes. They go, they're closing it down. They need to see you now.
Yeah. So you drove your ass.
I drove my ass over there. I'm rushing over there. I see the security guard at the front that had been telling me all the auditions. By the way, I had 5 auditions for Voyager. They saw everyone from here to Canada to down south to New York. You know, it was just crazy. And at one point, it was me and a kid from New York for the fifth. It was 6 auditions. The 5th audition, me and a kid from New York. Got out of there. I said, so what's going on? They go, oh, they're sending the New York kid home. Did I get it? Like, no. Now they're also auditioning older Ensign Kims. They're looking at like 30-something guys now. Mm-hmm. And they're going to find the best from that batch and match it up to you. So then I had to wait for like a month for that to happen.
So did you do the whole
group? Security guard was telling you this?
No, security guard was all throughout this process of this 6 times that I went, the same security guard would be at the front going, it's yours, man. He's like, I know you got this. Like that. He was like my little, I don't know, like my wise Yoda guy.
You
know, like
guru. And then when you got it, he disappeared.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He never showed
we
up.
Have no security guard at that gate. No one used that gate.
Is Herb here? Like Herb who? Like that. We don't have a Herb. Like Herb.
So,
it was Herb.
So did you do the whole stand with a whole bunch of group of actors to see if you all look good together? Did they cast individually?
Individually. Okay. And it was so annoying because every time I went to the casting director's office, there would be the pictures on the wall of the people that are already cast. Like after the first week, they had Tim Russ was already on the board, Roxanne Dawson was already on the board, so they had the Klingon chick, the Vulcan, and I think one other person. But I was like, man, those lucky bastards! I'm still last. Yeah, I'm the last. I was literally the last person.
Oh, wow.
And the casting director wasn't a good help either. She was just absolutely, the harshest woman I've ever dealt with. Mm. I had just my first reading with her, the pre-read. You just go in there, just, you know, a pre-read's a pre-read, right? There's nobody in there but the casting director. That's their way to look to make sure that you're good enough to go to English language. Can you speak English? Are you, you know, do you have any problems that I should know about now?
Are you going to embarrass me before I bring
you into the producers and the network? Right. That's what it is. And I just left a callback audition for a role in a movie called Glory Days, okay? It was a film written by Rich Wilkes, starring Ben Affleck before anyone knew who he was. Way back when. I was a second lead. It was about 5 guys in college at UC Santa Cruz living together in a house and just dealing with life and times, and it was the true life of the writer guy, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. It was really cool. And my role was playing this Japanese-American kid named Josh, whose character's name was Slosh because he was always drunk through the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And he was the lead singer of the punk band that they were in. So the callback audition was for me to
lip-sync. Now, do you look like Ensign Kim, you, at this point?
Yeah, I'm Ensign Kim me then. Okay,
so
short hair, clean cut.
Really clean cut.
Yeah, so they go, the callback audition, here's a little audio, here's a cassette tape. Take this home, either sing it or lip-sync this song, this punk song. And I planned on lip-syncing it, but at the end, I ended up singing. I was so into it, I sang it. And the callback audition was at this very strange, it was at a place that was probably 99.9% commercial audition. It's just rows and rows of actors sitting on benches waiting to go into commercials, like 6 or 7 different rooms. So I'm walking into this one room, and he goes, you ready? I go, I'm ready. So the song was Now We Are 21. So I start singing this thing, and they're going off. And the last part of the line, last part of the song is you hear the lead singer throwing stuff around, like things are getting broken. So he's like, 21, and things are like flying all over the place, you know. And so when I'm doing this, instead of I start throwing the chair that was there. I threw the chair. I ripped my clothes off like that. Flipped the director off. I flipped off everybody in the room like that and threw the thing. And then after I was done, I was like so out of breath and I was screaming. I screamed that at the top. I knew everybody out in the commercial thing was hearing this. So the director, he's recording. He stops it, just looks at me, walks around the thing, comes up to me, bear hugs me, picks me off the ground. He's 6'5", and he's like, I love you. I love you, man. I love you. drops me back down. I thought, I think I got
it. But you're
this.
Not right for the part.
you look more like Star Trek to me, you know? So I said, all right, cool. I remember opening up the door to a waiting area, which is usually bustling with activity and people talking. It was dead quiet. About 100 people were all looking at the door, were looking at me, because I'd made all that ruckus.
They're killing that Asian man.
It is an Asian death camp here. You must be careful. So I was,
take your soap for the showers. Yeah,
take your soap for the shower. So it was amazing. So I left that audition to go to my first audition for Voyager. So I rushed to Paramount. I'm there, and this is the days of pagers and no cell phones, so I'm at a payphone calling my agent, like, yeah, what's up? Oh, they want you for Glory Days. They booked you. I'm like, awesome, like that. I go, I knew I nailed that. You know, I'm so happy. She's like, so you're at your Star Trek pre-read? I'm like, yeah. Right when I'm talking, I look at, I'm in the phone booth on the Paramount lot on a corner. Rich Wilkes, the writer-director of Glory Days, is walking past the phone booth. I'm going, what the hell? And he's walking with some guy I don't know. And I go, oh, you know what? I just see the director. I got to go. Bye. Hung up. I walk. I go, Rich. And he's like, hey. He's like, congratulations. I go, thanks, man. He was like, I want you to meet a buddy of mine. This is Brandon Braga from Star Trek. Star Trek fame. He's one of the producer writers. Friend of mine. He's going to show me around the sets because I've always been a big Trek fan. You know, I'm a big Trekker, so I'm going to be looking around here. I go, oh, Brandon Braga. Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Garrett. I'm actually reading for your stuff right now. And he's like, oh. And Brandon, his delivery is always very just like old sage-ish, you know. He's like, well, hope to see you in the second rounds, like that. That's all he said, you know. I'm like, okay. So I walk off to that audition, and as they're walking away, I unbeknownst to me, their conversation was this. Rich Wilkes turned to Brandon Braga and said, don't you dare take my effing actor. You know, don't take him. Don't take him, like that. That's what they said. That's it. Wow. That was that conversation. Walked into Nan Dutton's office, and you're going to say? No.
Go, okay. Go for it.
Walked into Nan Dutton's office, who's casting Voyager, and the woman's like, ashtray like this big, filled, overflowing with cigarettes, already smoking when I'm in there.
A foot and a half big.
Foot and a half big, just smoking away. And she walks in. She's looking at me. She's obviously not in a good mood. And I sit down, I start doing the reading with her. And I've got the slides with me, so I'm referring to them because I didn't memorize them. It's a pre-read, you know? Right. And I'm reading, and she goes, stop, you actors. I'm like, what? And she's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm auditioning for you. She's like, why are you holding the slides like that? I said, because I don't know the lines. So you're not prepared? I said, no, I'm prepared, but I just came from a callback for a movie, which I just booked. She's like, what's the name of the movie? I said, Glory Days. She goes, never heard of it. And I said, okay, well, I just booked it. So I kind of put more of my emphasis of preparation for my callback. And since this is a pre-read, I thought I didn't have to be as prepared. Like, just for you to see if I can read, you know, I can have a voice.
That's the most annoying thing I've ever heard in my life.
And she goes, let me tell you a story. You know who Andy Garcia is? And I said, yeah, Andy Garcia. Yeah, of course, the actor. She's like, okay. I worked on his first big movie, 8 Million Ways to Die. Are you familiar? I'm familiar with it. He plays a drug lord. Yes. Okay, go ahead. Well, I worked on that film with Andy, okay? When he came in for the audition, do you think he was unprepared like you, not knowing his lines? And I looked at her. I said, no. That's right. He wasn't unprepared because he was prepared. And that's what makes him a star and you not. Bah! You know, and I'm sitting here going, my confidence is going, I mean, at that point, I'm shrinking, getting smaller and smaller. I'm thinking, wow, this really is bad. You know, this woman, through the casting director, is giving me so much crap right now and just making me feel like a nothing. So I said, she goes, so get your ass out of my office. Look over those auditions for 10 minutes and come in here prepared and do it again. So I walk out. I walk up to her assistant. I said, excuse me, could you reschedule me, please? I said, I'd like to have some more time. I'm a little frazzled right now. I think I've been verbally assaulted by your boss. And then she's like, you want to do what? I'd like to reschedule. Could you ask her, could you call in and see if she can reschedule me? She's like, I can't do that. I go, what? She beats everybody. So, you know, so her assistant was just, you know, crying that I asked her to make this request. She's like, I said, please, please make this request for me. She's okay, then you have to promise me something. I go, what? She's like, you can't be in the office while I ask her this. You need to go outside of the building, go in the alley, and I'll come into the alley and tell you what happened. So I had to leave the building. So I'm in the alley of Paramount Studios. So I'm waiting in the alley, like squunched down, like I'm hiding from the Gestapo. So then all of a sudden she comes back. She's like, her face is all lit up. She's like, oh my God, she said yes. Like, I'm like, what? She's like, you don't know how amazing this is. Nan says, she never says yes to anybody or anything, but she must really like you to reschedule you. You can come back tomorrow. I'm like, okay. So I came back the next day, started doing it. And it turns out it was a tough love thing. Nan was in love with me, but this is her way of showing me how she loved me.
This is her drill sergeant.
This is her drill sergeant act, yeah. And I remember the scene that I had to do for the callback for the producers. It was the death scene when B'Elanna Torres and Ensign Kim are in this like stairwell and they've got the disease on them, you know? Right. And they're sitting there going, and Kim goes, I can't believe this, you know, this is my first mission away from home and now I'm gonna die, you know? And she's like, you know, buck up, Starfleet, it's okay, da 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 da, whatever. So it was that scene, I'm dying scene. So I'm reading this with her before we go. She goes, you gotta come in so we can do a little session where I can coach you before you go into the producers and the network. So we do this, and she goes, oh, you actors. She starts getting into it again. I'm like, oh no, what did I do? Do you know how to show pain? I'm like, what? She's like, you're about to die here. Do you know how to show pain? I go, yeah, I know how to show pain. She gets up from around her desk. She comes over to me. She goes, okay, do the scene again. Don't worry what I'm doing. Just do the scene. Just do the scene while I'm doing what I'm doing to you. I'm like, what is she going to freaking do to me right now? I know. So she's standing next to me. She rolls up my sleeve. She grabs my arm like that and starts
Indian
giving me
burn.
An Indian burn. Yeah. She starts doing it as hard as she can. I'm going, I can't believe after 2 weeks I'm going to die like that. I'm doing the whole scene while she's doing it like this. And I said, isn't this, I'm thinking in my head, is this illegal? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure if I walked around and started like, you know, choking the casting director, I'd be arrested. But she's now trying to, you know, she's physically, you know, doing harm to me.
Sounds like she's frustrated.
Oh, yes.
She wants to be more involved, and so she's doing this.
That's
like
probably what it is.
Frustrated, yeah.
That's probably what it is. So I sat there, and I just, you know, part of me, my part of me was laughing, going, this is absolutely just ridiculous. But the other part of me was like, well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right? So I went in, did the audition. And,
she takes me on the couch. I'll just close my eyes. I'll just hum to myself.
Yeah. But she seemed to think that she knew what was going on. She's like, look, I know what they want. Those producers, they know nothing. They know nothing about what they need. I know what the needs that this role needs, like that, okay? You listen to me, you stick with me, you're going to get it. So, you know, you do whatever I say, okay? I'm like, all right, okay.
She probably gives the producer an Indian like, burn when you...
Do you like the actor I gave you?
Do you like the actor I gave you? Yes or no? Are you going to hire him, huh?
Sorry. All right, so...
Yes.
You've got the part.
Got the part, yeah.
And we... I'm a big fan of Voyager. I know that everyone picks their Star Trek series that they like. Yes. I put original series first, Voyager, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine.
I just mock you on every level of existence.
Yeah.
I mean, what's wrong with you?
Maureen and I...
Enterprise at the bottom?
Enterprise at the bottom. Now...
Maureen, go ahead.
Maureen and I watched Voyager. We were, like, hooked on Voyager. Big show for us. And part of the reason why I liked it, unfortunately, I'm one of the biggest Star Trek fans out there.
Wow.
He took off the ears. We said, yeah, Aaron,
I sat down next to all this. I'm going, all right.
Yeah, sitting next to my props.
Aaron, where's your badge?
Oh, yeah, I have a badge right here. I think, you know, as a big Star Trek fan, I think what a lot of people have criticized, including me, Star Trek, is that... After a while, it was the same show it was for the last, you know, 10, 15 years. Being on I guess it was the second to the last series. Yeah, second to the last series. Did you feel at all being on there that there was any type of pressure to make changes at all?
Before I answer that, you said your problem with Trek is that it becomes the same, what you're saying in the very beginning
The problem with Trek is that it never really evolved. Like, each series almost felt like the same. Actually, the reason why I thought Voyager was the best one is because it wasn't the same, you know, creatures every single time. It was, you know, like the original, they were visiting a new planet every time. There was there were not Klingons, there were not. So that's what I thought. It did take a step.
Yes.
But did you feel like that there was pressure to make change on the show after being like the third series? So you felt like they stuck to their guns with their original plan.
Most definitely. I think the reason why you like your ranking is the original, and then Voyager is because I think Voyager comes closest to the original.
I agree.
In that
totally
they are going out and you're meeting new species. I mean, well,
life, new civilization.
New life, yeah. I mean, with the original, it's all new life because that was, you'd never seen anything before. Then Voyager, now we're in Delta Quadrant, mm-hmm. so we're able to introduce all these new aliens and new foes and whatnot. So it's very similar to the original ones. You're not on the space station like Deep Space Nine. You're not.
I saw that the captains were the most similar.
Really?
Yeah, I really thought
Janeway,
that
Janeway and
I thought
Kirk?
Janeway,
I would love to see Janeway do Kirk Fu on someone.
I thought, like, I really one of the problems I had with the Picard character is that there was that whole PC 90s thing taken to extreme.
The diplomat captain instead of the action star captain.
Right, and there was never a good mix of it. It was always diplomatic. And I thought that they had changed the Janeway character to be a little bit more. She got pissed off and said, "You know what? No, I'm going to shoot." Or no, I don't care if there's a prime directive problem, kind of like Kirk. You know what I mean? Like, so that also felt a little bit like the original series. They had a better mix of...
Yeah, now did you see that on the show? Because I know from listening to you talk that you're not a geek.
Well, I'm
you're a jock.
No, I would say that I'm a mix of everything. Really, I'm not one of anything. I think I can stick my feet in any circle.
Cool.
I've always been a science fiction fan.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
My first sci-fi that I ever saw was Star Wars, the movie, when I was very young. You know, and I love that. I tried to build my own lightsaber. You know, so it's like, you know, I really
Aaron actually
got into it. Anything that was science fiction that came on TV or the movies, I would go see. Mm-hmm. You know, Star Trek was on at 3 or 4 in the afternoon when I was a kid, and I wasn't that into it because Star Wars, let's face it, their graphics, their visual effects were way better, you know, than the original Star Trek.
Yeah,
by virtue of time, you know, when they were there it is.
There's the lightsaber.
Nice.
Aaron's lightsaber.
I did a nice short film prop.
Got it? I was like, where is he going?
He's going into the closet.
Okay. So I think it was the same formula. I think what happened was... It's kind of sad because really, once Rick Berman showed up... A formula was set into place, right. And that formula was followed to the T for every single Star Trek episode.
Okay,
and you know the deal. This is what I heard.
We don't want to get you in trouble.
Oh,
so
I
we don't because
this point. I really don't.
You're free.
I'm free now. Yeah,
we've bitched at Rick Berman about Rick Berman before. You know,
Berman's an idiot. I'll tell you that.
The Borg couldn't kill Star Trek, but Berman did a great job.
Oh yeah,
well, he kind of law and ordered the show.
Yeah,
like you knew when you were going to sit down that you had the same type of show.
Yeah,
and it was like, ugh.
Well, let's put it this way: if you are the executive producer, if you're the showrunner, mm-hmm. okay, of a show, don't you think it would behoove you to show up on the set maybe once a week? Maybe.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Rick Berman, in 7 years, I saw him on the set twice. In 7 years.
No.
And the one time that I saw him on the set, he was actually doing a photo shoot for a Yahoo magazine or something. And he was standing at my station. And I was so pissed off. I'm like, get out of my station. He was standing at the op station. And
that's so funny.
I'm sitting there. That's for you.
Excuse me, that's
excuse
my chair.
Me, but that's my chair. Excuse me. I don't know who made you ops officer, but you ain't it, buddy. So he's there. But this is you ain't having the best of it. Where they had set up, it was Friday, so they set up lunch at these long picnic tables right in front of the bridge. So right on stage 8, and the bridge is right there. The tables are there, and they break the actors first for lunch. And the first two actors broken for lunch were myself and Ethan Phillips. So Neelix and Kim are broken for lunch.
Wonderful actor.
Yeah. So we get our food. We sit down. I'm sitting down with my back to the bridge. Neelix is sitting across from me, with his vision being me and then the bridge, all the bridge. And I look back, I go, oh, there's Berman doing a photo shoot. And he's in my station like that. I said that to Neelix. And Neelix is like, hey. He's like, ah, don't worry about it. Don't worry. And all of a sudden we're eating a little bit. And Neelix sits there and he's eating. And he goes,
is the bridge supposed to be on fire?
He said that. So then I go, what are you talking? I look behind. The lights that they had set up to light Rick Berman, okay, caught the set on fire. Okay, they had all these tarps and stuff on over it like that. Like that. And Berman's looking up going like a scared little boy. He's like, ah! God! He runs out of there. I'm like, you pussy. Like that. I was like, wait. That's what you get for staying at the op station. It burns down, bitch. Like that. That's what I felt.
He ran so ghetto out.
Then I was like, yo, man.
He ran out.
He ran out. I mean, they just ran. They left all the equipment there, you know, the lights, you know. The camera crew took off. He ran out of there like a little baby girl. I mean, it was just so like, I'm sorry, I'm being so, God. But it was freaking hilarious. So then me and Neelix become the heroes. We're like, we run over to the little break glass, you know, and we pull out the freaking hose like that. We're like firemen, man. We're like reserve firemen. So we're like, and all the crew come over and then the fire gets put out. But it was hardcore because there's all these like scrim sort of things that kind of like give the right lighting on the bridge. Right. But they're made of cloth, you know. Oh, and so that went up in a blaze.
There's and it was a futuristic Enterprise or Voyager fire system,
like a foam system.
Yeah. I'm picturing one person standing off the set going, "Keep filming, keep shooting."
Berman's like covered with foam. Like, yeah. He's like a foam snowman. Going,
no, see, Aaron, that's when they just like. Run all the air out of the ship all at once, right. And then everybody dies, and they couldn't do that.
Right,
So it was just
so it was on tracks, and that's the thing is I kind of wondered if the franchise was so huge, such a big ship to turn that it just got impossible. You know, there's so much.
Oh come
it wasn't
on!
The right, it
come
wasn't on. The right. You know what? I mean, it's
the right captain at the helm, you could turn any ship.
Pretty much. It wasn't the right. It was the wrong leadership. Okay.
It's totally
the wrong leadership. I mean, I just recently heard this rumor, but supposedly, Rick Berman was an executive at Paramount years ago.
Okay.
That they did not like. Paramount wanted to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
So Gene Roddenberry comes in with an idea to do a Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets a green light for that. And so Paramount goes, you know what we can do with Berman? Let's go ahead and send him on that sci-fi show. It'll get canceled real quick. Like that, you know, so that's kind of what I heard happen.
Crap.
He got sent over there.
Mm.
And they thought he'll be gone in a year. Bye-bye, right. Berman. And that's the rumor. But then it didn't go.
So
didn't
I didn't know
it.
He had
But Gene Roddenberry had creative control over Next Generation.
Yes, and then he came over to... Berman came over to work on it with him.
And so he was
I guess Roddenberry was so late in his life, his faculties weren't entirely there because his bullshit meter wasn't working, you know, in terms of finding out who was really a genuine character person to run the show, you know?
Wow.
And he gave it off to the guy who was the thief in the night, you know? Because truly... That I don't know anyone who I've actually had anger towards in terms of thinking that's not a very nice person.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a hell, you know, in this world, in this existence that we have that people can go to, he's first on the list. That's what I've always said to people.
Wow.
It's pretty hardcore. It's pretty hardcore.
So, but okay.
Yeah.
Now, was your time on the show positive though throughout that, or was that
up and down like any job? There's positive and negatives always. But back to the direction of the show, I think once he got in there with Next Generation, they found a certain formula. He found his star writer, which was Brandon Braga.
Right.
Brandon Braga was an intern. Brandon Braga got raised up into writing staff, and then producer, higher and higher. And Brandon wrote some great Next Generation episodes. You know, that people were just
really
floored
good.
Over. You're going, wow. And they used that same formula for Voyager. You know,
did they bring in new writers and try to get new?
Sure, they tried to, but the thing was, they have it's so formulaic that you couldn't really stray from that. If you try to do anything different, they wouldn't go for it. They actually made people change their performances and reshoot stuff that wasn't to their liking. The first day that we were cast, we had a lunch meeting with Berman. He's, congratulations, all of you got cast for the show. First of all, I'd like to point out that for all of you playing human characters, you need to downplay your characters.
I heard this rumor. This is insanity.
Yes, because you need to downplay your roles in order to... And we're like, what? This is the only way for the aliens to look realistic. So, and then we're like, what do you mean? He's like, well, all you humans, you're going to have to be pretty much just cardboard cutouts.
Yeah,
you're military, no emotion, no nothing. So the first season, every time someone that was a human had too much emotion, reshoot.
I heard this rumor. I couldn't believe
hear
it
this?
When I heard
yeah.
that. I could not believe it.
So I disagreed with it.
Now, unlike the original Star Trek, where everyone, you know, is flying off, you know, it's going crazy.
So now, was that...
But that's why people like the original one, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Because people are... I mean, if you're a human...
Real.
You're the one that has the emotions, more so than the damn aliens. You know what I'm saying? And that's where it's at. The straight men were the aliens, right? You know, it was just like, okay...
Well, this is what we've discovered today. Berman is an alien.
He is an alien.
That really shocked. I mean, when you look back on it, you can see it.
Maybe that's why I had a sort of adverse reaction to Voyagers because I tried to watch it the first season.
That was a series-wide thing. I heard that from Next Generation.
Really?
Yeah, that's been like a 15-year comment.
Patrick Stewart's British, so... Emotionless is fine.
I guess, affects the show.
It does, and I remember Kate did the most reshoots. Mm-hmm. Kate Mulgrew did the most reshoots because if you allowed all the stuff in there that she did for the first year as the captain, you would have had enough tears to fill up a gallon of like a Sparklets water bottle. Mm-hmm. She was crying her butt off that whole first year. Every time any tear came out, no, you can't cry. You've got to be the tough as nails captain like that. And so the first season, her entire time as Janeway, you don't see her get emotional, that emotional, or cry about anything. So she doesn't seem that human at all. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you have this huge, huge, you know, following, a lesbian following of Janeway, you know, not to say that has any correlation. Yeah. But I think that it's really sad when you have to squelch the true creative process of the actor, because the actor feels this is what's going to work for the role. Let me do this. And all of a sudden the executive producer tells you, no, that's too much. Remember, the aliens have to look real, you know.
Well, so I can see saying, okay, here is the style of a show or a style of a movie, and say, you know, but that is kind of an absurd style.
But you never you never want to suck the emotion or life out of something.
Otherwise, why go see it?
But it's interesting because this makes me think about Battlestar Galactica. Do you watch that at all?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And, you know, the President Rosalind, who has so much that she does that it sounds like, you know, I mean, has so much range, and it sounds like all that range, all that possibility that we see with her is...
Could have been there,
yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And I've always told people, I said, after Battlestar first came out, and, you know, thank God and kudos to Ron Moore for being someone who was in the Berman and Braga fold that got...
out.
Basically, well, backstabbed, you know, and then he goes off and does something like this, which honestly blows away anything that's out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing what he's done with the remake of Battlestar. Mm-hmm. And I've always told people, man,
it's true.
Janeway
sci-fi.
Could have been like Roslyn, you know, it could have been just
exactly.
The thing. And what makes Battlestar Galactica work is that you have a separation of powers. You have the woman president, mm-hmm. but yet you have the guy who's in the person in
the
charge
military.
Of the military is the guy. Okay, so you and which works. Perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfectly. We had death threats with people when we first started because what? Woman captain? Whatever? Da, 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 that's
really?
Horrible.
Even
yeah.
now?
Yeah, even now. And yeah, but I'll tell you, it's the first time that she had to do a major like action scene was an episode called The 37s, where we go on a planet and we discover all these people who disappeared in 1937. Amelia Earhart, you know, all these people that were in the ship, you know, and there's a. So we come under fire. By the aliens of this planet. They're shooting at us. We're in this rocky terrain. And Janeway's sitting there behind the rock, and she turns to us. She goes, "All right." She goes, "Cover me." Like that. So we start, "Lay covering fire." So we're shooting like that. And she gets up from behind the rock. She starts running. And she ran like the... it was so not athletic. It was so not captainish. It was like this. And I was looking at oh. And I remember all the other actors were like, oh my God. The camera people were like, whoa. You know, that's how she's going to do it like that. And after that, she never did anything action after that. They never put her in anything because it just didn't work.
Wow.
It just didn't work. You're going to follow that into battle? No. Like that. It was like, no.
But
that's like my aunt running, you know? It didn't work.
But the funny thing is that out of the captains that they wrote that for her, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
the other ones didn't do it either, but they just didn't write it in.
Well, if you watch after that episode, all the action goes to Chakotay or you know somebody at Tuvok. Kim gets to do it. You know, it doesn't go to Janeway any longer.
Right,
it doesn't. Didn't work.
Okay,
you know?
Now since it is formulaic, since the show is formulaic and it has a huge cast, how did you react? Well, I have two questions. How did you react to how much they got to your character? Did it allow you to operate as an actor, and did it allow you to flush out your character at all, or were you just the cardboard cutout that you were set within a storyline?
I was very much the cardboard cutout for a lot of the show, definitely. But I mean, I tried. Trust me, I tried. I remember going in there after the first season. I was like, okay. I'm the only actor on this show that doesn't have a stunt double yet. Okay, that means I've done nothing action wise. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't kissed a girl yet. I haven't done, you know, crap. Is there anything that you can do for me this second season?
Throw me a bone here.
Throw me a bone here, you know? So they threw me a bone. All into one episode. They rolled it into one episode. And in that episode, Kim goes is in a basically you see him back on Earth with his girlfriend, and he's a wanted prisoner, and he's trying to escape, and he gets to kiss the girl, mm-hmm. and he gets to fight and run and jump and do all those things. And I went back to Brandon's office. I said, Brandon, I wanted you to spread that out throughout the season, not all into one episode, you know? So, and I always said to them, I said, we need more comedy. I said, one of the things that has endeared the original Star Trek to fans is the comedic interactions amongst those cast members, you know? Mm-hmm. There's some funny stuff that goes on. I said, can we do some more, we need some more, an injection of humor. Any show that's dramatic needs a balance. You need to have to balance. You got to have some type of funny stuff going on. And they just wouldn't go for it. They in their eyes, they thought, well, we're stuck with the formula. Well, the formula is this. Remember, you guys are the humans. You can't have much emotion, which includes comedy. You can't have that either.
Because humans aren't funny.
Humans aren't funny. We're going to put we're going to bet and bank our money on the aliens and non-humans. That means the doctor, the holographic doctor gets to be funny, and Neelix gets to be funny. Right. Nobody else. Look on, how do they get sucked into that? Because Next Generation, Data was the one that brought in all the laughs. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So they thought, hey, that's it. It's got to be the person who's not here.
We've got the saying, Brent Spiner's a good actor.
Right. That's the way, that's how it went. Hmm. And they kind of just backed themselves into that corner. And it was a constant fight for me, too. Because my specialty, what I love to do is impersonations. And I said, God, we could just have a shipwide talent show when I get up there and just joking around and start impersonating everybody. And they're like,
your Janeway impersonation.
They're like, no, we don't, that's not a good idea. And I think it's almost like a rub on against me in that it was coincidence that this happened, but two times on the show in the entire run of Voyager did people actually got to impersonate another character. One was Barclay. Barclay got to impersonate Janeway. Mm-hmm. So I happen to be in both scenes with that actor when they're doing that. So I'm sitting here
going, Dwight Schultz, right?
God. Yeah, Dwight Schultz is doing Janeway, and I'm sitting here just bawling. Then there's another one where Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, gets to impersonate the Doctor. And again, I was just dying because that's my impersonation, you know? Right.
Just remember, Kes, anybody can stargaze on the bridge, but the real action happens in sick bay.
So, I mean, that's all, you know, it's like very...
really good. That was a really good impersonation.
Yeah, and that actually was on 1 to 10. 10 being really good, that was probably a 4.5. So there's days I can nail it so good that I've told them, if Picardo gets laryngitis, I'll loop for him. I'll do ADR. I can get in my butt in there and talk just like him. You know, so it's just...
That's funny. Yeah.
So, I mean, I said, you know, use the talents that you have here. If people come to you and you want to, work with them, mm-hmm. you know, think about that.
Okay, so how did Trek during this time period affect your life? I mean, now you're on a show.
Yeah.
So it changed.
Well, it's amazing. Changed my relationship with my parents entirely. You know, mm-hmm. it went from them saying being ashamed of me and upset with me to now, oh my God, they had at home when Trek was running, they had all three VCRs taping.
Just in case one failed.
No, just in case two failed, the third one would work. Okay?
They had a DVD later. Yeah.
They had to ship tapes off, you know? Yeah. It's like,
Mom, yeah, I can always get you this stuff. She's like, no, it's fine. Your dad and I like recording it. You know, I'm like, okay. So they have everything recorded three times, okay? Now, if you were to meet my parents, it doesn't matter where you're at. You could be at a grocery store. If you bump into it, my first question my mom will ask you is like, ask me if I have kids. You know, it's like, ask me how I lost weight. One of those buttons. Like, ask me who my kids are, right?
Right.
So then she'll go into this whole long, drawn-out thing. My dad will say, well, here's his trading card. We've got his action figure. I mean, they have everything on them right now. At all times, it's on their person, okay? This is our son! We love him so much! You know? Whereas before, it's like, you're going to get acting? You need to join the army! Like that. I just keep hearing the army, the
So now
army.
That you were successful, you became a Jew.
You can now call me Wongstein from this point forward. Chinese Jew. That's great. But I'm gay and a Jew.
Oh, that's right.
Remember?
That
don't forget that. So it was. It's nice. I mean, to have the parents finally in your side. But just to approach your question again, no, they never got to the point where they were like, oh, we got to change course with the show. You know, mm-hmm. oh, we got to do this because we're done. It was the same formula, same thing in and out. The only reason why Jerry Ryan was brought in, literally, it was a matter of them letting go of Kes.
Really?
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't, we need Boob of 9 to be on the show.
60
they had problems.
60 of 9?
Thank you.
Okay. No, 2 of D. They had problems.
T of A.
Yeah, T of A. Yeah.
2 of D. That
T of A, could you please? Yeah.
Did she get jokes about that from you guys on the set?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we got mostly fans would tell us the stuff. I heard 2 of D from a fan. So.
She had the weirdest costume of all of you guys. I mean,
she did. It was an engineering marvel is what that thing was. There was all kinds of little things inside, those support beams and rods, and it's crazy. It took like 45 minutes to take it off. So if she had to go pee, she had to calculate when she would feel like going to pee, and then had to take it off. So it was tough.
There wasn't outside pressure that you guys felt like, oh, we got to put in some, we got to spray on a suit on this chick and sprayed her around.
No. But that move proved to be one of the most influential moves that producers decided on that year, because what happened was once they brought her in, Janeway, or the actress, Kate Mulgrew, took great offense to that. Mm-hmm. Because here she is.
Really?
Think about that. You're the first woman captain in the history of any science fiction event, or in anything, really, right? Mm-hmm. Of substance. Yeah. And everything's coasting along fine. Year one, year two, year three. End of year three, you let go of one actor and you hire another. Jennifer Lean is Kes.
Oh, okay.
The new actress, Jeri Ryan, comes in playing 7 of 9, and all of a sudden the TNA element comes in. Mm-hmm. Okay, so as a woman captain, you're thinking, "Wow, look what I've done for women all across the globe. I've stepped one step forward for women's rights, you know." And then they bring this in, the bada ba boom woman, you know.
Right.
So she felt, "What? Everything I've worked for is now erased because of what you guys have done and brought in this character."
Like, yeah, the reason why you didn't cast a white dude in this is because you wanted
to change.
Make a statement and a that we're progressive.
We're progressive. We're modern. We're open. We're rainbow casting. We're, you know, whatever you want to say. We're going with it. We're the progressive show out there.
Wow.
And now you've just went back into the caveman days again, you know? And so she was pissed.
Mm-hmm. How long did she stay pissed?
Pissed for season 4, 5, 6, and 7 till the end of the show.
Wow.
And
she wasn't pissed at the actor, was she?
Made it so difficult, because her pissedness should have been towards the producers for doing this.
Right.
Yes, she did complain to the producers, but they were like a blank slate to her. Every time she went into them, they're like, sorry, no, you know, you're fine, just work on your stuff, whatever. We're not going to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
So she turned her anger towards Jeri Ryan, which to this day, if you ever meet Jeri Ryan on the street, don't talk Trek with her, because she's not happy with Trek. Her experiences of Trek were basically of shielding herself from the barbs and arrows that came from Janeway, from you know, Kate Mulgrew.
Really?
Actually, the only actor I've ever approached ever was her. Now, she had not had an episode air yet, though.
Oh, so she was still...
She had just gotten the role, and it had been announced, and I happened to have seen a picture of who had gotten this part, and I was into the show.
Yeah.
And I was at Best Buy, and she was, like, buying video games, like a stack of fucking video games.
Really?
And so she was standing next to me, and I went, oh, hey, congratulations on your new gig. I hope you understand you're a Trek character now, and I hope she goes, yeah, I've heard.
And that was it?
That was a stack
of video games?
Yeah.
Must have been for her son.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think
I'm
of.
Sure.
Huh.
But yeah, she's the only person I've ever approached because bugging people.
So. It was difficult because it started to drain on everybody else. It was like, God, stop it already.
How were the other interactions in the cast?
Fine. Up until that point happened.
Oh.
That killed it. I mean, that was just like, oh. And you come into work, you got to the point where you didn't even want to go to work. You're like, not again. Or you look at the call sheet, Janeway and Seven. Oh, they're working together with me today.
They put them in every scene together. I mean, they, you know.
And the thing, if you look at the writing, they made the writing to sound, a lot of Janeway's lines were like, Seven, you know.
Seven, you've got to learn to get along with people. You've got to,
all the things that the writers were trying to tell Kate Mulgrew to chill out about was what they made her character say to 7 of 9. Isn't that funny? They were
weird.
Well, they like to do that. They like to try to put, you know, their commentary on the actors of what they want happening to shows up in the lines. Mm-hmm. I remember in the fourth season, we got so heavy. all the boys on the show. We got so fat from eating craft service and not working out. There was actually an episode called The Demon Planet. I don't know if you remember this. Mm-hmm. We're on the planet, and then we've got these our suits on. I'm touching this pool of mercury, and the liquid goes into my spacesuit. It compromises my life support. So I'm sitting here going, oh, my gosh, you know. I'm like, oh, Paris, I got to get back to the shuttle. And he's like, oh, my God, you know, I'm losing life support. So he's carrying me, and I'm like, ugh. And Paris goes, do me a favor. I'm like, yeah, what's that? If we ever make it back to the ship, promise me that you work out. Like that. That was the line. Like that.
And you're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I get it. And there were three or four of the lines about working out, about being overweight, right? So I called Brandon up. I go, Brandon, what are you doing, you jerk? And he's like, well, in his cryptic way. And he's like, if you guys stay on the same course that you've been going on, we'll have to change the name of the show to Star Trek Pigs in Space.
I go, you bastard.
That's yeah. Witty. Yeah. How'd he come up with that one?
So what's the life after Star Trek? I know that you've done you've done some of these, what are they called? The cons, conventions.
Yeah.
That's where you met my sister at one point. Yes. And
did you think she was hot?
What do you think of Aaron's sister?
Yeah.
Say whatever you feel.
I think she's smoking personally, but
she's quite plain looking, actually. I would say that, I mean, yes. I would not recognize her out of a crowd whatsoever. She walked past me in the street, I wouldn't look twice. I don't think. No, she's a nice girl. I really.
she likes going to those conventions. She has fun and she likes talking to all those
people. I think it's
because
she went to London and made bank.
Well, it was.
Well, you make money.
I met her at a Tulsa show, so she didn't make bank in the Tulsa show. But no. I remember we went out to go get a drink at a bar, and we had in tow with us literally 25 fans followed us. So we're sitting here walking over, and there's I felt like the Pied Piper, you know, yeah. Like walking around. Like,
that's
and so
bizarre.
It was bizarre. So here we are, we're sitting at the bar, we're drinking some wine with like 10 people on this side and 10 people on that side, just watching a tennis match while she. She'd say something, they'd look over here. I'd say something back, they'd look over here.
He
said something.
That's
and I was
bizarre.
Like, yeah, and she's sitting here going, yeah. You know, like that. And I'm like, comes with the territory. Yeah, okay, like that. Like, cheers, like
so
that.
So you were like the old Trek guru instructing her serenity.
Yeah. I have done so many conventions that I couldn't even count how many I've done. I did 17 before any other Star Trek Voyager cast member did one. Wow. It was just
you
insanity.
Whore on the. You,
I'm a convention whore, but I literally
were you asked or did you want to?
Yeah, I got asked. I got asked, and I kept doing them, and I do stand up on stage. I do impersonations. So for me, it's a show.
Yeah,
it is a show. It's not a Q&A. I get up there and I perform. You know, so
that's
you
cool.
You watch. I don't even take a question.
Plus,
it's totally
if
different.
You had been doing Trek at the time and you're sort of a cardboard cutout, you must have felt this sort of creative dearth.
I told people. I said, you know why I do these, it's not for the money. I do this because you get to see what I can do, what I'm capable of. I've been relegated to this cardboard cutout for so long that every time I go to a convention, I'm like, I'm so happy to be here. I'm like, thank you. I'm going to accept this award of Mr. America right now. I'm so happy to show these people that I'm not shields down to 30%, Captain. Like that.
Well,
Captain.
I think part of my sister also
Captain.
Likes it. Like, you know, you sit there and do this in front of a cold camera. And then you go home and you do, next day you go and there's the cold camera there. And you don't, like in the theater, you're getting feedback.
Yes.
And you're like, hey, you know,
yes.
I like that thing
it,
that you
it
did.
It is an audience interaction that you're getting. Mm-hmm. And it's like theater because when you do a play, you can feel the energy of the audience in front of you. And the same thing when you're on the convention stage. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, 500 to up to 5,000 people in that audience focusing their energy on you. You truly do know what it feels like to be a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it's the biggest high you can get. Mm-hmm. It really is. When you're on that stage over anything man-made or chemically made, you're just like, whoa. Like, and I tell my friends, I go, well, what do you mean? I said, well, the best way I can describe it, I am energy surfing when I'm on that stage.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're throwing this waves and waves of energy and I'm taking each wave and going with it, you know? What they give me, whoom, I throw it right back at them. I do a little hook turn, you know, boom. And they feel it too, you know? And people, when I get off stage, they're like, God, if we could just take whatever you have in you and bottle it, we could be millionaires. Fans are telling me this. Mm-hmm. You know, you were just, oh, you just, thank you so much. You're the best person on stage I've seen in my life. You know, I don't know what it is.
Well, some people take these conventions as, you know, something you have to do to keep your career moving.
Oh, no, no.
And, yeah. you know, so no. you, they probably pick up on the energy. You're like,
I'm not a big convention goer, but mm-hmm. the one I did go to was a Xena convention. Mm-hmm. Long story. But it was clear of the three people they got
He's
up to go there.
Don's a lesbian.
You can tell by the goatee. they had Lucy Lawless. They had mm-hmm. the woman who played her sidekick, Renee O'Connor.
The blonde chick, right?
The blonde chick. And they had the blonde woman who played her arch-villain nemesis yeah. right through the entire piece. Right. And now, Lucy Lawless and the arch-nemesis were clearly doing exactly what you're talking about and having a really good time,
right.
whipping people up into a frenzy. The sidekick, though... clearly looked really uncomfortable being there. Yeah. She felt this is not my career. This is not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
This mm-hmm. is beneath me.
Yes.
You know, and yeah. you can tell that. It's really clear. It's you can perspective see it when someone does
really
that.
Is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. Hmm. Yeah. And wow. and you'll get that. People that are just like,
so now what's gone on post-Trek?
Post-Trek.
And what's the do you still do conventions? Do you still,
yeah,
you know?
They've died down, but I still do them. Mm-hmm.
I saw you were in the West.
Yeah, yes, I was in the West. Into the West was the first thing I did after Trek, which is a long gap if you think about that. That was mm-hmm. 2005, so it was four
was
four
that deliberate
years. No, man, I'm telling you, I was getting, remember what I told you when I first started, I got like an audition a month mm-hmm. when I first started as right. an actor. After Voyager was done, I was getting one audition every 2 to 3 months.
Wow.
Which
now,
is
do you it? Think that's a Star Trek thing, or do you think you're older, you think that the climate has changed? You think, like, where do you feel
the climate
like
has changed? Okay. I've been in a cocoon this entire time for 7 years, from mm-hmm. 94 to 2000, April 2001. I was in a cocoon,
mm-hmm.
you know, I didn't have to worry about getting a job, I didn't have to worry about whatever, you know.
Right.
People were coming and going. When did your sister start, by the way? What year was she when she first got
Christina's
her?
Christina's an anomaly,
yeah. She,
beggars and choosers doing or whatever.
When was yeah. she, man, that was about 8 years ago. I mean, yeah. she just. She
Christina like, walks backwards and jobs hit her.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, she's good. I mean, she's pretty, and I think that's why
she's
people
pretty
she gets
honest.
In, she gets seen a lot, but she closes the deal. I mean, she's yeah. good, which yeah. is,
she,
you know.
She's yeah. good.
But that's rare.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
What do you
but
feel,
climate
what
is,
do you feel
climate
has changed?
Changed. Yeah. Climate has changed.
What do you feel has changed?
Well, it's very obvious. I think mm-hmm. everyone, you know, every network or everybody has realized that you can spend very minimal amount of money mm-hmm. and put content. I feel bad when I see yeah. new actors in town. I go,
two-thirds of your
you
jobs.
Showed up at the wrong time. Because, yeah. you know, look yeah. what you're going up against mm-hmm. right now.
Yes. You also are dealing with the double whammy because now it used to be that if you had film and TV were two different fields and you did not
right.
cross over.
Right. right.
And yeah, a movie actor doing
that's,
television.
Now movie actors true. Are doing guest
exactly.
stars.
See, that's Alec what Baldwin. I was going to say next, because I tell mm-hmm. people, I go, well, how come you only have an audition every 3 months? I said, well, because of two things. Reality programming, you know, increased content of reality programming. And two, all the people who used to make a living at film that weren't the lead leads are now moving into television because yeah. mm-hmm. they cannot make a living in film any longer, because if they're paying one person $25 million, everybody else has to get crap.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that's yeah. it. Even the big leads are coming over and doing TV.
Oh, hell yeah. yeah.
Alec Baldwin with a sitcom just yeah. seems sure. really unnatural. Sure.
My wife had all these friends when she first moved out here who were all making a living in TV. I mean, they made a living as actors,
yeah.
and none of them can do it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, none of yeah. them.
And there seems like there are very few roles for gay Jewish actors.
There are so few roles for gay Chinese so. Jews,
Gaysian.
But
Gaysian Jews.
Gay Jewsons.
Gay
Jewsons. yeah, it's definitely a changed business.
Hmm.
And the only way to truly tackle that is to come up with one's own projects. You know?
And in fact,
that's really, you know what? I think that we're on the cusp of a new era in Hollywood. I still
I
truly
agree
believe
with
this.
You.
I think that the independent alternative content distribution is about yes. ready to get picked up. So mm-hmm. we're not yes. going to be making yeah. you know $20,000 an episode.
Well, it's also going to turn Hollywood from a location yeah. to a concept.
Yeah. True.
You know,
but what it means is that you know you're not going to make $20,000 an episode. You're going to make everyone's going to make reasonable salaries like the rest of the world. And not the entire world's not going to see it. It's not going to be the next Lost, but a lot of people are going to see it. It could be great quality, and everyone's yeah. working, making a living.
Yeah,
we're not big giant movie stars, big $1 million, blah, 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 that might start falling a little bit, but you know what? That's all good.
So is that part of the reason why you changed your look, or did you just change your look because this is how you feel you are right now?
No, I changed my look because my hair was long before I got Voyager. They made me cut it all off. I tried to keep my hair long for Voyager, but they weren't into it. They didn't, you know, didn't
work. Well, it's not Starfleet.
Yeah, they tried to pin it. I went to the hair woman, and she put like 127 bobby pins in there, turning it and twisting it underneath. You know,
trying to save it.
Trying to make it look short because I wanted to save it. So I walk into the Berman's office, and he looks at it. He's like, "No." He goes, "Cut your hair and go buy a house. Get out of my office." That's exactly what he said. "Cut your hair, go buy a house, get out of my office."
Yeah, go buy a house, it'll make you feel better.
Yeah. So, I just grew it back to the length that I wanted it.
Where's the house?
Yeah. The house that I bought was in Hollywood Hills. So,
or you can always cut it, too.
And you can always cut it, exactly.
You can't grow it out very easily.
There you go. Yeah.
And it's right. Not Ensign Kim.
It's hard to fake.
And it takes a lot of
Ensign Kim.
And it's not Ensign Kim. It's totally opposite.
Which is going to be the big trip.
I just did a project.
You have the Ensign Kim to show what you look like. I mean,
that's true. They can look at
that. They can figure it out.
Look at 7 years of that.
They can look at that.
That's a shitload of tape.
There's a project called Of Gods and Men, which was an independent Star Trek film that we just finished. Shot that up in upstate New York. Very interesting story. The set that we use is an actual set. Replica of the original.
Oh, I know these guys
from New Voyages. Cats, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We worked on their set. Okay.
Is that set just crazy?
Crazy. It's in an abandoned, you know, car dealership garage in upstate New York, and there's no sound insulation whatsoever. When we were filming, it was also concurrent with the Harley Davidson Festival. So, like, you know, every 10 minutes,
cut.
Cut like that.
So it's like Ill's film.
Yeah, you know,
but they had to Chekhov did the damn show last year.
This one is those were just episodes, right? They were doing New Voyages was doing a single episode. Mm-hmm. This is actually a full length feature film.
Tell me they have new characters. Are they doing?
It's a mix. You have the Uhura is Uhura, so they have Nichelle Nichols in there.
Okay.
Chekhov is playing Chekhov as he's playing himself and another character.
Okay,
he's in there. J.G. Hertzler is in there as a Klingon. The Dabo girl,
really,
Lita. Chase Masterson is playing an Orion slave girl.
Chase, how surprising!
Hi, Chase. Yes.
Hi, Chase. She's in that, and then. I play Tim Russ is playing Tuvok. Tim Russ is directing it also, and a character. I don't play Kim. I play a security officer on the bridge of a ship.
Crazy. Is he an emotional alien?
Huh?
Is he an emotional alien? Do you get to smile in the movie?
I'm a bad guy, so I don't really smile that much. But it's very rare to see me playing bad guys, so it's nice to do that.
I think this look
and acts
will
of violence
change,
will have. I think the look is definitely changing.
Yeah.
So they're trying to make this a downloadable film because they don't want to get pirated. So they're going to break it up into three parts, and they want to have each download $6, whatever it is.
Can charge.
Here's the deal. They're in talks right now with Paramount, so they want to see what they can get going with them. Paramount's interested though. I mean,
really?
they're going
that's crazy.
Because there's nothing on the horizon. Well, now there is with what the Josh. Yeah. Josh Whedon's film, right?
No, J.J. Abrams.
Oh, J.J. Abrams. Is it J.J. Abrams?
Yeah.
Yes.
J.J. Abrams.
Josh Whedon. J.J. Abrams' film, yes. Mm-hmm. So there is going to be something in the market there.
I know who you meant.
I'm glad that I thought Paramount was just locked down, that they're pretty inflexible, but that's pretty cool that they might be a little bit...
We'll see.
Pretty good.
I mean, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
All right. Well, we should wrap up because we're over an hour and a half. But
yes,
I have a little thing.
So bad right now.
This room is so hot.
I'm a Schwitzer.
So, a la the actors studio.
Oh,
I thought I would channel a little bit of James Lipton here.
Can you do a James Lipton impersonation?
I don't know if I can do a little James Lipton. I don't think I can ass kiss that well.
I hope this goes better than it did with Christina.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to do a little, since we do actors, we're going to do James Lipton.
Now, that's not really fair because every actor knows that they're going to be asked those questions on that show.
So you want to look at a list real quick?
No.
All right, okay.
Let me have it.
What is your favorite word?
Oh my god! My favorite word.
What is your favorite word?
There was such a gap with my sister. I know. Yeah, I had to edit the gap down because that one question just stumps everybody.
We went to get drinks.
There were crickets. I said, just give me the first thing that comes to my mind. And then the only thing that came into my head was Cheeto. I don't know why. Like Cheetos, like a little, it was like one Cheeto. Right. Cheeto is my favorite word.
I guess we're going to get lunch up. Yeah,
what is your least favorite word?
Oh... least favorite
See?
Word.
It's like kill. You. I'm gonna have to email.
Again, my now. First thing that came into my head was basket. I don't know why. I mean, these are just very bizarre.
Rifle is one of mine.
Rifle,
table, oh. Rifle, exactly. Beverage, refreshment. Those, all those are on my list.
Okay, what turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Oh God.
See, James Lifton, he has the hard ones. Yes, though. Yes, the ridiculous.
Because who cares what your favorite word is? No, really. Like, who in their right mind cares what your favorite word is?
Tom Hanks' favorite word.
Tom Hanks' favorite word is Jiminy. Hey.
Oh my God!
What turns you on?
What turns me on?
What
creatively?
Turns you on creatively, spiritually,
or
emotionally?
Usually, it's like the sound of a children laughing. Is the bullshit answer.
Yeah, that's what they usually do. Laugh.
But you could say cocaine if
Gay
you want
Jusians?
To.
Christina. No.
I only did that for them. I know they wanted that one time. Right back. I know. Creatively, just being, you know, honestly, first day on the set. That's a huge turn on for me. Yeah. I mean, I just love that first day where you're sitting there, you're meeting everybody, the energy's there, you're excited to be doing something.
That's cool.
All right, what turns you off?
Oh, it turns me off.
The sound of a child crying.
No.
Berman's voice.
No, female act. Women series regular. Women act actors. Women actors that do not focus on the job at hand.
Oh,
how's that?
Okay, that's vague.
If I become a showrunner where I create a show and I'm the guy, I will only cast one female series regular. Because when you got another woman, boy, the fireworks will fly. It doesn't matter what the deal is. They're always flying.
Wow,
I'm telling you right now.
Sensing some tension, Captain.
Okay, so the best thing, what turns me off, diva-like attitude.
Okay.
Diva-like attitude. Diva-like attitude. Out the window with that.
All right, what's your favorite curse word?
Probably.
Boop.
I missed it.
Ready?
You preempted it.
Fucking A.
All right. What sound or noise do you love?
What sound or noise me a lot?
Do you know what sound or noise do you love?
Oh, do I love sound or noise? Do I love?
That could be dangerous.
I know.
That
could be dangerous.
They never say it real though.
I'll have what he's having.
okay. This. What sound or hearing the words, are you ready for some football? How's that?
All right, great.
I'm a huge football fan. So.
What sound or noise do you hate?
And that's the game.
Okay. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt? Anesthesiologist.
Architect.
Really? Mm. Same as me. What profession would you not like to do?
Gravedigger.
Okay. What, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I've made a mistake. You're not supposed to be here, but what the hell? Come on in.
That's great.
Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Garrett Wong. Thank you very much.
That guy's got so much energy. He's amazing.
He's like Matt on crack.
He was like Matt on crack.
Yeah, he was good. Great interview. And it was good for him to be candid with us about, you know.
You think he was candid?
I mean, it's nice. I mean, you always hear the actors say the same thing. The director's always great, blah, blah, blah. It's always the same bullshit over and over. And it's good to hear the insider story.
Absolutely.
So, anyway.
Let's close it out.
Don, you wanted to bring up
one
something?
Of the people from our forums was so kind as to write a new introduction for our show. Now, unfortunately, our show is too long for an introduction. But here's the intro that he wrote. Welcome to Geeks On, home of the No Geek Left Behind initiative. It may shock you to learn that in some communities of this great interweb, there exist geeks who have yet to suckle at the sweet teat of Battlestar Galactica. While we take convoluted skill systems for granted, GURPS 4th edition is still an unrealized dream for them. Somewhere, lost in a monochromatic wilderness too long ignored, a fellow geekling huddles over the cold light of a Game Boy, thinking Tetris is as good as it gets. My friends, this ends today. The No Geek Left Behind initiative will provide Xbox 360 consoles to geeklings who have known only the Atari Jaguar system, may it rest in peace. We intend to offer an in-depth curriculum covering the acclaimed work of Asimov, Gaiman, and MC Chris.
Yes!
It is our sincerest hope that within 1 year, all geeklings will know the difference between Mos Eisley and Mos Def. We will endeavor to embrace geeks of every stripe, whether they be THACO or they rock the D20, whether they be special edition or they know deep in their hearts that Han shot first, whether they have rescued Princess Peach or enjoy dressing up like her. This is truly the dawn of a new era. Welcome to Geeks On.
Woohoo!
I can barely speak English. It's amazing I got through all of that at once. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Well, here you are. Thank you, Dre. I'd say you've wasted another hour and a half of your life, but it's a little longer than that this time.
Yes, yeah. It is. It's time to wrap it up.
So, now, we have a couple other podcasts out there that have been so kind as to offer us chances to put promos for our podcast on theirs.
Mm-hmm.
What's more, we actually have a radio station that's asked us to do some trailers for them.
So one of us has content.
So we are going to be putting together some trailers and promos over the next couple days, maybe next week, week and a half. We're going to record a couple and then send them out to other podcasts and a couple other venues.
Yep.
So we are busy writing them right now, trying to put together just the right feel for us. But we would like to invite any of our listeners out there who feel that they know the way to convey the unique geekiness of our podcast.
If you know what Geeks On is to you,
then why not share it with us? Send in your best ideas for a promo, and we will do not only ours, but the best one, the one we like best, that is submitted to us.
Excellent.
And we will send you an e-copy of it so that you have it for your records, too.
And remember, you know, they should be very short, because
30 seconds?
Very short. Less than that.
Less than that.
10 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah, just keep it short and clever. That's what we want.
Short and clever, like me.
Short.
Okay.
So anyway, I think that's about it.
Sounds like it.
Cool.
So have a great geek week, everyone.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming back and sharing another morning, afternoon, drive, whatever the hell you're listening to us on.
Oh, will you get that?
Yeah, sure, no problem.